Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to be picking up on our scripture reading that we left off last week. Last week we read chapter 3 of Matthew. This week we're going to read chapter 4. So this is the Gospel of Matthew, and it is read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward an hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. But he answered and said, It is written, Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Then the devil taketh him up into the holy city, and setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple, and saith unto him, If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. For it is written, He shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone. Jesus said unto him, It is written again, Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. Again the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them, and saith unto him, All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. Then saith Jesus unto him, Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. Now when Jesus had heard that John was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is upon the sea coast in the borders of Zebulun and Naphtalim, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Esaias the prophet, saying, The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtalim by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region and shadow of death, light is sprung up. From that time Jesus began to preach and to say, Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And he saith unto them, Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they straightway left their nets and followed him. And going on from thence he saw other two brethren, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, in a ship with Zebedee their father, mending their nets. And he called them. And they immediately left the ship and their father, and followed him. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria. And they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy. And he healed them. And there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, and from Decapolis, and from Jerusalem, and from Judea, and from beyond Jordan.
Okay, by the way, am I sharing my desk? Is my desktop being shared? I don't know why this program doesn't allow me to see whether that's happening or not.
Yes, it looks good, John. I've been following.
It is being shared. Okay. All right. We did a paper last week. We were working on it, and we actually got it out today. And it does concern part of the 14th Amendment. We've been taking another look at the 14th Amendment, and maybe we'll discuss that a little bit this evening if people want to do that. Basically, we did a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. And we're going to take a look at that mandamus. It's a very short paper. It's only going to take a couple of minutes to read. We filed a lot of papers with the United States Supreme Court. We've been nailing our papers to their door now for a couple of years. This is just another paper in addition that we're filing. And we did copy President Trump, Secretary Pompeo on this, and the Attorney General Barr. And it's concerning subversion, and we have notified the United States Supreme Court prior on numerous occasions concerning subversion by domestic enemies, enemies within. They haven't really done anything about it. We are presumptuous that they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, but the deep state is going down, and that should be gone soon, we would think. And they should be able to stand up for those who are going to stand up for our republic and protect our liberties, because right now they're not. For those who don't know, and I think most of the people that come here, they do know about this because we've discussed this before. We've read papers on this. It's part of our testing. We have numerous courses, and in those courses there's some testing as we go through the process. We have a civics course, and we have a government by consent course, which covers the Constitution in pretty good depth. Again, as I said, we filed a lot of papers, but this particular paper lays out the position concerning what they're going to do about the dangers of Marxism. But in 1934, the government, not the government, but well, they are the government, but Congress, passed the Rules Enabling Act. And this is very important for people to realize and understand this and get this word out, because we have lost our courts. We've lost them back in the 30s. Like all things that they do, is little by little progressively until the memory of things are out of the people. So they've been taking their time for many, many years. They've been working at this for literally since 1776, the enemy has been in the gates, in our doors, in our house. But in any event, in 1934, they did pass that Rules Enabling Act, which allowed the United States Supreme Court to write their own rules. Kind of makes sense that they should participate in the rulemaking so that, because they would understand, you would think, the system and how the court should operate and what the procedure should be and the rules for evidence and so on. But in that, they've written quite a few rules that are repugnant. And what Congress couldn't do and what no man could do before, the United States Supreme Court did do, and they abrogated the common law in America. The common law is no more and has not been for quite some time. We did manage to open up a court case and maintain access into the filing process, and we've opened a common law court, and we've been making decisions for quite some time now. In the beginning, we were filing a lot of papers, but we've been making decisions now and sending informations and mandamus's commands. And this is a command here to the United States Supreme Court. Now, and we've been discussing this issue on who's responsible, who's liable for making sure that people are removed from office if they are in bad behavior. Generally speaking, Congress should be doing that. They should be impeaching anybody within bad behavior, whether it's in the United States Supreme Court or within their own house or in the Senate. They should be removing people who are in bad behavior. And that would include anyone, even people within the administration. Of course, the president could be removed again through the only process, a way a president could be removed is through, going through Congress and having him impeached and then the trial in the Senate. We've seen that they tried to do that, and of course they didn't get the conviction. When Congress acts on these things with an impeachment, it's the exact same thing as what the people would do with an indictment on an individual. So an impeachment is an indictment. But of course, the trial takes place in court, and in this case, it takes place through the Senate in court, presided over by the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. We did see that process go through, and of course, the indictment didn't stand, the impeachment didn't stand, shall I say. But in any event, they were responsible, the United States Supreme Court, for the rulemaking. And in 1938 is when they released their rules, particularly Rule 2, which is what seems they claim to have abrogated the common law, which we're going to read a little bit about. Well, actually, I don't think we're going to read the very specifics in this paper. We'll see, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that after the paper. Let's see what the paper says. But the other rule that was repugnant was Rule 12. And we are in a case against YouTube, by the way, which we'll talk about that right after we read this. But we're in a case where we sued YouTube and Google, Facebook, and Twitter for ultimately silencing the people, their right of First Amendment free speech. But let's look at the paper, and then we'll talk a little bit about that afterwards. Okay, so this is a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. All right, this paper is a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, copied as President Trump, Secretary Pompeo, and Attorney General Barr. The conventions of the number of the states, having at the time of their adoption the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its power, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the grounds of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Of course, that's the Bill of Rights. Any elected or appointed individual vested with constitutional powers, after being bound by oath to support, preserve, protect, and defend the declared and restrictive clauses of our Constitution for the United States, and who uses their elective office to engage in overt political speech that wars against our God-given natural law liberties, being the supreme authority with the intent to incite others to revolt against the laws of nature's God, thereby overthrowing our unalienable Bill of Rights, is guilty of insurrection, a traitor to we the people, and is guilty of high treason against the sovereign people. Said elected or appointed individuals are in violation of their oath. Sadly, many from the Democratic Party overtly, and some Republicans covertly, have succumbed to Marxism, that embraces the abolition of private property ownership, which is irreconcilable with common law republic, which is the law of the land, that embraces ownership of one's own body, land, and unalienable rights attached to the same, thus placing we the people and our republic in jeopardy. Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate, protected by their deep state, and given cover by its mockingbird media, have placed us in a quandary that neither the House nor the Senate can resolve. Therefore, only the people can resolve this problem, for it is the right of we the people. It is our duty to throw off such government and to provide new gods for our safety. Amendment 14, Section 3 provides one constitutional solution, where we read, "No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elected or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislator or an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. These political Marxist parasites, orchestrated by a small group of cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men, have subverted the power of the people and usurped for themselves the reign of government. They exploit our liberties to undermine our Constitution. They obstruct the execution of our laws. They work with all combinations and associations under whatever plausible character with the real design to direct, control, counteract, or the regular deliberation and action of the constitutional authorities. They put into place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a small but artful and enterprising minority to make the public administration the mirror of their ill-concerted and incompatible schemes of their secret society, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests. They serve to organize factions, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force. This is an invasion where the enemy is hiding in plain sight. Their subverters must be removed from office before they collapse our constitutional political system. USC 18, subsection 2382, requires that we first make known the aforesaid to some judge. We, the people herein, are making known to the United States Supreme Court for the removal from office of these subverters in violation of Amendment 14, Section 3. If you fail to act to save our republic, we will consider the United States Supreme Court justices co-conspirators, giving aid and comfort to the following partial list of subverters, and we the people will perform our duty via indictments for all enemies within our federal government. And of course now we have a list of subverters. We don't have any Republicans on. These are all people that we see overtly are subverting our Constitution, subverting our Bill of Rights. But we don't have any Republicans openly, subverting. We do know that some of them are covertly, and there are many Democrats for sure that are covertly involved with this also. So it's kind of hidden from sight, and it needs more investigation. But right now, the ones that are obvious and plainly hold up Marxism or communism, those are the people listed out here. Okay, this paper was sealed on August 31st, 2020, and mailed out on the same day. Okay, and we did make some attachments, 45 communist goals and 10 planks of communism is attached to this. It's 3 pages. And also we made reference to the video of Norman Dodd video concerning the hidden agenda for a one world government. We have, as a matter of fact, that particular video is in our course, our civics course, and we do have it up online. But anyway, this was recorded in Congress, 45 communist goals as read into the congressional record in 1963. Norman Dodd, I believe, the interview that he was, I think that was done in the 80s. I'm not sure. I think it's mentioned in the video if anybody wants to see it. But there is a link to that video. You can go to, of course, our website, /G-Edward-Griffin. I believe the Rees Committee took place in the 50s, and it might have started in the late 40s, but I believe it was in the 50s. And the revelation was pretty startling, and read in everything was recorded into Congress, and yet Congress did nothing. The United States Supreme Court did nothing, and the President of the United States did nothing. And this particular conspiracy continues on. And we're starting to see now that the deep state is being dismantled, and we are preparing, you know, for the end of these things, hopefully soon, hopefully before the election. Things have come to a head and things have been revealed. You know, people have a right of free speech, and you could talk about anything you wish within, well, of course, you know, there's certain things you cannot talk about, you know, anything that is profane, particularly in public. But you can communicate and talk about Marxism or things of that nature, but you cannot preach, teach, or do anything to cause an organization in order to destroy the very republic that we have. And that's exactly what Marxism does. And there is a law concerning that. I think that law is, I think we covered that, we referred to it back in this paper. I know in the other paper we did make a reference in one of the footnotes, and we get into some details on that, and maybe we'll read that or part of that next week and look at that. But anyway, this paper was filed on the 31st, which is today, and served upon the United States Supreme Court. We were just sending, when we sent our papers to the Supreme Court, we were only sending them to Chief Justice Roberts and trusting
right, this
that,
paper is a writ mandamus to the United States Supreme Court.
Okay, I hit the button on that recording. Anyway, we did, we were sending our papers to Roberts, as I mentioned, Chief Judge, and I'm beginning to wonder whether he's been sharing this with the other justices. So this one here, and from this point forward, we're going to send one to each one of them. So we did send it out to all nine justices. We have been sending everything out that we've been doing to the president, and we've been doing that since 2016. This paper that we filed, there is a process to it. Now, we've had some discussions on this paper. We kind of held it up for a week because we were going to focus in on the Secretary of State, which would be Pompeo. And, you know, from conversations with others, we've heard that it is the authority of the State Department within the states, or the State Department for the federal government, which would be Pompeo. It would be the Secretary of State's job if an individual was guilty of such things. In other words, teaching and preaching and using their office in order to subvert our Constitution, that they would be removed from office. Now, I've been searching around trying to find the specific codes or statutes that speaks about that authority for the state secretary. I haven't been able to find that yet. There are 57 codes out there. I thought I narrowed them down to specific codes, but some of these codes are very, very long, and it takes a while to go through it, and I've been running keywords through it trying to see if I can find something. I haven't been able to find anything yet, but when and if we do find something, we will take that and pursue, you know, taking our case to Pompeo also. But we did copy him, and if he's aware of his duty to do something about it, then I'm sure he'll do it. I think they already are aware of this. I think there is a plan for this, because you can't take an oath to uphold and protect and support the Constitution and then preach Marxism and then go up against our Bill of Rights. Now, I'm going to paraphrase this a little bit, but Biden recently, just today or yesterday or over the weekend, or very, very recently, I just saw this. He was talking somewhere, and he mentioned on YouTube, who talked about the Second Amendment, and he said, you can rest assured we're going to take the guns. And again, I'm paraphrasing. I'm not sure exactly, but it's pretty clear that that pretty much is what his intent or what he was saying. And he might have said those very words, that that they're going to start removing weapons from the people if he were to become elected president. So that's where we're at. This is an assault, a direct assault upon the foundation of America, upon our unalienable rights. To think that they think that they can take away our unalienable rights, not civil rights, not man-given rights, but our God-given rights. And again, there is a code that's very clear,
And again, it's very clear, just logic is very clear when they take an oath to protect and serve and uphold the Constitution and then use their office to destroy it. That's subversion, no matter how you go about it. And my thinking and position not long ago was that as long as they weren't in office, they can do whatever they want. But after looking very carefully, considering what this is all about, which is really a plan to destroy our nation, whether these people are in government or not, that's unlawful. We watched, anybody who's been watching the Republican convention, which, by the way, we did post up on our website. You can go into the news, and you can go to right down to the Republican convention, and you can watch the convention if you haven't seen it. I'll tell you what, it was the best Republican convention that I've ever witnessed. I've never sat through an entire Republican convention. I've always watched parts of it, and used to watch a little bit of the Democrats here or there too. But I've been a lifelong Republican, and I've always been on that, you know, that position. But I also have seen the enemy within our camp as well as in the Democrat camp. But in here, this was a pretty powerful convention, and anybody who would like to watch the parts of that, you know, they're like 3 hours long, each one of them. They've done over three nights or four nights. I mean, I think it was four nights, one, two, three, yeah, four nights. But it was really, really good. It wasn't, you know, they had real people. It was organic. It was uplifting. It was just great. So again, if you haven't seen it, you know, from time to time, go out and click the button, listen a half hour, an hour, and come back another time and listen to another hour, whatever. But it's well worth going through because it really is uplifting. And by the way, we were interviewed just this past week, last week. I think we were interviewed on Tuesday. And you can go on the news and click on our TV and radio interviews if you're interested in listening to some of those things. But this was a pretty good interview. It was a three-hour interview. They were going to break it down to three parts, but I guess she decided to just put it up there. And it was free range, hosted by Gail of Gaia, and they interviewed myself and Gerard. And spoke a lot about our book, pretty much everything we spoke about on that particular program is covered in the book, and pretty much most of what we speak about here at National Liberty Alliance is in the book. The book was 10 years in the making. You know, I've been writing for over 10 years, just recording all the information and gathering information and, you know, questioning and looking into things, and eventually, you know, I wasn't planning on writing a book, but at some point in time I started to realize, hey, I've got enough stuff here, I should write a book. And so we're going through the publishing right now, and by the way, we are looking for people to help us to support the cost of that book, to publish that book. So anybody that could help us, we've collected 14% already. I had to borrow money to get the initial things going to get this book published. The book, ultimately the contract that I've written, that was written and put together with the publishers, the release in December. But they did promise that they would push things along. I'll be talking with them tomorrow. But they'll be pushing things along to push things ahead of the time so that they can potentially get it out in November. So we are shooting for a release of the book in November. But right now we've collected about $1,500. Now, you know, I know there are people out there with some deep pockets. And this, you know, if you're going to put your money anywhere, put it in America. Put it in educating the people. Because that's what the purpose, this book is put together solely for the purpose of educating the people. And of course the name of the book is Government by Consent. And so again, we want to do is get this book into the hands of a lot of people. So we're planning to send the copy of this book to a lot of the key individuals in government that seem to be on our side. And every time I listen to Trump speak, and there's always a little bit here, a little bit there, He's thinking a lot like we're thinking here, and he's seeing and understanding liberty and freedom. He's seeing the corruption, and he's seeing the corruption in the courts. That's clear, too. But what we are looking to do is bring back the common law, and from the state of mind of the people today, it may appear to be very radical, and it could be very frightening to the fact that you are responsible. Because right now, the way our government is going, we have gone so far off course, so far off course. And the only way we're going to be able to bring this back is to educate ourselves and to educate our children. And that's one of the things recently Trump was talking about over the weekend, or maybe, well, whatever, it was just recent, last couple of days. And he was talking about the need of educating our children. Now, we've been talking about that for quite some time now, and that they've been teaching the isms in these schools, Marxism, communism, socialism, whatever ism you want to call it. But that's what they've been teaching in school. I'm very much aware of it. I've seen it. I've heard it. And I'm appalled by it. And I know we have to make a change. We have to change this. Our children's minds are being destroyed, and people don't even realize it. And they continue to send their children to school. And that's why President Trump pushed the idea, it's more than an idea. He's actually pushing it into enforcement as the requirement. Two things. First of all, the choice of parents to send their children to the school of their choice. You know, and this is something I've been wondering and trying to push through. Not in a big way, at least not lately, but quite some time ago, the idea that government should allow the parents to decide where they want their children to go to school. I understand that each child that goes to school, it costs something like $18,500 per child to send them to school, which is a ridiculous amount of money. I don't know where all this money is going to. You know, my son, I sent him to a private school for his first 3 years, kindergarten first and second, and then we homeschooled him after that, and it was a great school. And that didn't cost us anywhere near $18,000. I think it was like $4,000 a year to send him, maybe $4,500. And then if you send a second child, you know, you get the second child for about $3,000, and you give you $1,000 off, and then the third child a little more, and so on. And it was a Christian school, really a very, very a great school. Really great. $18,500, the schooling and the education that you can get to your child. So that's A, number one, that Trump has pushed through. The other thing he's pushing through is the requirement of the teaching of civics. And he talked about the Marxism, or I think he used socialism or something, but that they were pressing and pushing and teaching our children destructive things about America. Pushing their socialist agenda, their Marxist agenda. And so he's pushing that point now, and we are too, and we're going to hope to be able to participate in that education. Our next goal is to write textbooks. So we'd like to take the book that we've written here and write textbooks with it. And there's a lot more that we can add to this, a lot of history we can add to this. And create these textbooks, you know, for our children so that they are properly educated. Because a proper education is what's required. I've taken constitutional courses that I've never finished because they bored me to tears. And I never felt exciting about it. I mean, yeah, it's good stuff here or there, but it's just boring. And that's my opinion. We try to look at the exciting things, the deep things, the heritage. What is our heritage? What is the meaning of liberty? What's the difference between law and equity? Where did this all come from? What are the roots? What exactly? And you'll never hear these things in any of these places, you know, but that's trying to teach the Constitution. What is the Declaration of Independence? You know, a lot of people, they don't even think about that as being a law document, but it's the foundation of America. It's the foundation of who we are as a people. It lays the foundation of our entire Constitution, which, again, is the framework of our government, and then the Bill of Rights, which is the capstone. So you have the foundation, the frame, and the capstone. And that foundation is to be under law. And the word law, and whether you go into Black's Law Dictionary, Bouvier's Dictionary, go into Blackstone and read about law, you will find that law is always natural law, period. Now, there is what's called positive law. Positive law is man-made law, and it identifies with equity. And we have in the Constitution the law of the land, and the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court is clearly laid out as in law and equity. Now, positive equity is positive law as long as it is lawful law. And that's a very important point to really understand, because there's I went through Blacks and discovered that there are 51 jurisdictions that it teaches. And, of course, two of those jurisdictions particularly, of course, in there is equity and law. But there's civil law, there's Roman law, there's Justinian, and there's different kinds of jurisdictions and things that the court that's spoken about that's in history, so it's all recorded. But equity that is unlawful, or let's say equity that is lawful, is something that comes with authority. And that authority must trace its roots right back to the nature's God. It must go back to God. And the Constitution, again, as I mentioned, the foundation of our Constitution is the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence is the foundation, as I mentioned, and it is a covenant with God. To be under the blessings of his liberty, is which is what we're given by desiring to live under his law. And therefore, we receive a blessings of liberty, which the very first beginning, the preamble to the Constitution speaks about government is there to protect the blessings of liberty. It's right in the preamble. And so it must come from God. So God, we've made a covenant with God through the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of our law, that all men are created equal and created in the image and likeness of God, and that we receive the blessings of liberty. We therefore had the authority from God to have government by consent, and we, the people, wrote the Constitution for the United States of America. And we ordained and established it. It says so right in the very beginning. As a matter of fact, why don't we see if we can read that that particular part, if I can get to it. Founding documents. Now he says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, okay, there are six things, six directives that we've given to our government, and it's all found in these first the first three lines right here, the preamble. The purpose of a constitution and the outcome of our law that we have placed, before them and put them underneath is, number one, to form a more perfect union. That's one of the main reasons. To establish justice. And we've lost that justice. We need to reestablish it. That's what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. To ensure domestic tranquility. Clearly, the streets of our democratic cities are nothing but tranquil these days. And Trump is being very patient. And recently he said, I'll come in there with, I'll come in there without their permission. But in order to do that, he has to then exercise a subversion clause in the United States in the U.S. Constitution, and he's not willing to do that yet, but at some point if he had to, I'm sure he will. But at the same time, it's also revealing to the people what's really going on, and these people are just insane and destructive to what we have here. Provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare, and to secure the blessings of liberty. Liberty is a blessing, and government is here to secure that blessing, to make sure that that Bill of Rights is protected. And so right there in the preamble lays the whole thing out. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, And therefore, we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, who ordains but kings? Kings ordain. And so we, the people, are kings of our own domain, of our own life. We're in charge of us. And positive law, civil law, no matter whatever law you want to call it, does not apply to we, the people. The only law that applies to we, the people, is the law, which ultimately brings us under God's law. And that is decided by 12 individuals. And if it's a criminal thing, of course, we have to be indicted by we, the people, by an untainted grand jury. That's the key. And then if we are indicted, then we have a trial by jury, which is 12 individuals. And they need to be also unadulterated. They cannot be stacked, because right now, today, they stack juries. They've been stacking them for a long time, a very, very long time. It's very easy for them to figure out the psychological makeup of the individuals that they're calling in, especially today. And we talked a little bit about this on the interview we had just this past week. And I didn't think about this at the time. Gerard was talking about, you know, and they probably do have some kind of a software or something where they can feed all this information and have it spit out to discover what people you want to put on what case. And there's no doubt about they're doing this, whether they use a computer program or not. But I realize now with the Facebook, they do, right?
Absolutely. And Google and them are cooperating, because they have all your information of what you search and everything, and they build a profile. And their algorithms tell them to pick the people that fit this profile. It is almost rock solid that they're going to get what they want, because they pick by what you buy, what you talk about, and everything. They know who you
are.
We
see that they almost do. They almost do always get their way, almost every time. Very rare. Like the Bundys, I couldn't believe were able to get off.
Because
they did get through.
They were in court acting like fools, and the people said this is crazy. But, you know, they pick people based on, you know, their morals and their ideas. And so it's pretty well locked up that they're going to get their verdict that they want. It's very, very... He claims they can change millions of votes. You know, he says 150 million votes by the algorithms on Google. The answers they give you when you Google something, it forms your ideas, it forms your mind, and they already know that they got you brainwashed to a certain...
Yeah, and they've been doing that for quite some time, ever since Hollywood's been around, radio, TV, and so on.
They're good at it now. They got it down to a science now, but I'm sorry, I won't butt in. I just had to say that.
All right, well, anyway, you know, that brings us to Facebook, and that's exactly what I was thinking, the same thing that you just mentioned, and that is that, hey, they already got everything. They already know who to call, you know? If they call a good person who knows the law, who knows their heritage and understands the Constitution, as soon as you start to reveal yourself, you're out. You're not going to be in that jury. And this is evil. This is a problem. This is why we are building the administrations across America.
They're going to call you to begin with, because they already know what you know.
Yeah.
Don't forget that Facebook was LifeLock. It was a DARPA government program that was supposed to track every human being. And they figured out that we're not going to get all the information if we ask them. They said we have to have something where they'll volunteer. And that's exactly what everybody does. They go on there, they cry about this and they cry about that. And I bought this and I bought that and I did this and I did that. And the government has all that information. And they built a profile on you. It was a government program that they gave to Zuckerberg. He didn't make it. They made it. He just administered it. They needed a person to say that this was his program, so that people would volunteer the information. And that's why we have what we have, because we volunteered our information. And now they have a profile on everybody that uses it. So it's pretty scary. All right.
Right. So anyway, this is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. And, you know, excuse me. We are building administrations in every county in America, with some exceptions, of course, in very, very rural areas. They'll may have to travel to another county. You know, up in Alaska, there's a lot of rural places. You know, you're not going to find a federal court up there in particular counties. A state court, I'm sorry, in particular counties. But generally speaking, any place that there's a reasonable population, you will have a a state court. So there are 3,134 counties at last count, and probably 3,000 counties have state courts in them. And maybe, some of the rural ones, they have to travel into another county to get there because it just doesn't make any sense to put a court. But in any event, these courts right now, the judges and the prosecutors control them completely, both the grand jury and the trial jury. They have them. And, you know, the grand jury, as these people say, which is that we should feel insulted by this and upset about this, their idea that they can, you know, indict a ham sandwich. And the judges, one of the first things they address the jury, the trial jury, when they come together, one of the first things they're told is, look, you get to decide the facts, but I decide the law. I will interpret it for you. So the moment that you talk about anything in opposition to that, they're not going to call you. They're going to make sure that you're not going to be on that jury. So it's a major problem. And if you do get through and you try to, you know, bring up the true law and to stand on liberty, to stand on our Constitution, to stand on to be able to say no to the law, jury nullification, you face the danger of being arrested, and that's how bad it is. But again, it is an uphill battle to get into the courts. They have no door to access a natural law court. It's either civil or criminal. That's it. No door to access it. We have to fight. We have to put it onto the paper and fight it. And by the way, we do have a case coming up, as I mentioned a little earlier, against YouTube. And particularly our focus was on YouTube, but it's also on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google. And because they control everything and they control what they're going to allow through free speech, they have taken down some videos that I have totally put together myself with no music or anything that might have violated anything. But they have put some of the videos back. And recently, as I mentioned, they took one down, so got to make sure no music gets into our program when we upload them. But we're at a hearing, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that hearing after I finish talking, and maybe people will bring it up, or maybe Gerard will talk about it, what took place at that hearing. But we have another hearing coming up. And it's in the Southern District, and we're asking people that could travel down to Westchester County, which is north of New York City, and so it's not down in New York City, but it's the Southern District up in Westchester. But with this thing going on with the covert virus and all that stuff, they gave us a phone hearing over the phone, and they gave us a second one. And, of course, they're trying to throw us out of the court. We wrote a paper concerning that, and I think over the course of the next couple of weeks we'll read parts of that, or maybe we'll read the whole thing in one shot. I'm not sure. I'll take a look at it. If it's not too long, maybe we'll read it all in one shot. But the paper we wrote was in response to what took place in that courtroom. And so we have another hearing, and we will post this conspicuously, and as soon as we... on our website, and we'll let everybody know by email, and we'll make note of it every Monday until the hearing. But again, it's a hearing against YouTube, Google, and others. And I'm going to give you the phone number for anybody and the code to get into the court. The court is going to be on September 25th, 2020, at 11 a.m. And anybody that could make it to get to a phone and come into that courtroom to sit and listen, and even write, we're going to ask people to write affidavits. So when you enter in, if you're entering into the phone, through the phone, they'll ask you your name, and you'll just give them the name, and you let them know with the grand common law grand jury. That's all, and then you'll sit in on the hearing. Gerard and I are the only ones speaking in the court. And so we'll be speaking and defending our position. And again, we already know what they're trying to do. They've already told us what they're trying to do. And so again, the paper is going to address that. We'll pick that up next week, and we will talk a little more about it. But anyway, it's going to be September 25th. So everybody should write this on your calendars. If you can be at this court, the more people that could be into this court, the better. We need to let them know that we are many and that they are few. So September 25th at 11 a.m., and the phone number to get in with an access code is 877-336-1839. That's 877-336-1839. The access code is 104-7966. That's 104-7966, September 25th, 11 a.m. And this will be going up on our YouTube page, and we will, anybody that's listening in on YouTube to this and would like to come into the court and be part of the jury, as part of the grand jury, that is, just when you get into the line and you get in, you'll give your name, and you just tell them you're with the common law grand jury. And you can sit in and listen. It could very well be a good education for people. And the more people in there is an intimidation. I found out something new just recently, and I didn't realize or really think much about this too much. And that is, and then I found in the law, when we were in the court, I found out this is a magistrate judge. And if you go into Black's Law or any of these other dictionaries or go back and research, a magistrate is not a justice in the sense that they're not a judicial individual. They're not to participate as a judge. They're not a judge. Okay, they can sign warrants. They can marry people. There's lots of things that a magistrate can do. A magistrate sits in a court of law. Okay, as an administrator, they're not as a judge. They cannot be a judge. They can make no judicial decisions at all, period, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. So they can make no decisions. They can't have any hearings where they are ruling in any way to make any kind of a ruling. But they're only supposed to be sitting in on courts of record where the people are the tribunal. The tribunal are the people, not the judge. The people are the judge. And that magistrate is there for the sole purpose to record, to make sure the will of that jury, the decision of that jury, is put down properly. And then, of course, they sign it and seal it, and that makes it official and pushes it forward for execution to the sheriff or whatever needs to be done at the end of the case. They also act as a traffic cop to make sure that each side continues and everything is in proper order as the case goes through the system, through the process. But again, they are not judges. But in the rules, amazing what they've done in rules. Rule 2 combined equity and law and called it civil law. Now, civil law is Roman law. And as a matter of fact, I've spoken to many lawyers over the years, and they are under the thinking that we are under Roman law. If you look into Black's civil law, Roman law, Justinian, all of it is the same. It's the same thing. And so that's what they're being taught in law school. Our children being taught Marxism. And all of these lawyers, and there's many lawyers, all of these lawyers are taught to be the minions of the New World Order, to maintain that Marxist focus, keep things going. Lawyers have their fingers in everything. So all these bar attorneys out there. Now, lawyers are taught good things also. They're taught, the different codes, like I said, there are 57, I think, codes out there, and each one of these codes apply to a different jurisdiction. And we do need people who are lawyers that are learned in different areas. Any federal judge must be learned in all of those areas, okay? They're highly educated. And so whatever jurisdiction, you know, you fall into, they need to be able to run through that jurisdiction and apply those code statutes and regulations there. And that requires quite a bit of education. How you get a magistrate and give them the authority to act as a judge in a federal court is just, it's amazing. And we saw the ignorance of this judge, this magistrate judge in the court. I was kind of surprised on her ignorance. I mean, she was really ignorant to the law. And but in any event, that happened. They created in another rule where they, and actually it wasn't a rule, but it was in the writing, and just sort of a tag on. I forget exactly how it is. We do cover this a little bit in a paper that we wrote. But the magistrate judge is given the authority. The magistrates are given the authority as a judge, and they call them magistrate judges, and they put them into the court and act as judges. Okay. Now, they were supposed to inform me that I have to approve of that. And they didn't. I found that out through my own research as I was looking into some of the things that was going on in the court, and then I read through some of these codes, and I found this out that they had done this. And but each one of these lawyers, you know, this all the sides have to write in a paper and sign it to agree to this. Now I haven't done that, and yet that court case went forward, and yet they didn't tell me that. And I'm going to make a big stink about that when we get into the court on the 25th. That they didn't advise me of that, and they're continuing a court trying to throw us out, and they don't even have the my authority for them to continue, because that is what's required. And so we did dispose of the judge in our paper, and we did require a presidentially appointed judge, so a judge that's appointed by the president. We don't want a judge that was not appointed lawfully by the president. We don't want a magistrate in there because we want to get down to the end. In other words, they're trying to take us into a jurisdiction unknown. We want a judge that understands what's going on, and they make the proper decision to send us back into our own court, which is a court of record that they have no business in, that they cannot stick their toes or their fingers into this courtroom. They have no business with it. And this is what the American people don't realize. They don't understand that the people should be running this court. We're under, you know, under the court system in the sense that under the auspices of the court, but not under the control of the court. And we can get advice from the court, but they don't control this court, the court of the law. And so any criminal case must be a court of record. Must be a court of record. You can have nothing. Your liberty cannot be taken unless you're in a court of record. And any case that's over over $20, which is an ounce of gold back then when it was written. So but in any event, it's $20. That's what's written. So anything over $20, you can require a trial by jury. That makes it a court of record. Clearly, we opened a court of record, and they tried to take it away from us. And this is the battle we're at with right now. Them trying to ply upon us Rule 12, which is to just throw us out of the court because they say our case is nonsense. Okay, and the second, of course, is they want. Well, there's more than two that they want to throw us also out because they claim that we can't represent people and us. Well, they know we can come in pro se, and but again, we've clearly laid on paper the truth about that. And there is what's called what the federal court system recognizes as a next friend. This judge didn't know any of these things, and matter of fact, the judge we spoke about, you know, the law being turned to civil law, and she piped in and said something to the effect that it's been like that for hundreds of years, or 100 years, or something. I think she said hundreds. I think she said hundreds, didn't she say, Gerard? And in any event, you know, we corrected her and told her, no, that was in 1934.
She said hundreds of years.
Yeah, but the common law has been abrogated hundreds of years ago. That's treason. for a federal magistrate with the being a judge, I mean, you know, what education did this individual have to be able to be a judge, to know all 57, you know, jurisdictions? You know, I can understand where they say, well, okay, well, you know, we'll send this one in to deal with the sovereign citizens people, you know, or certain little cases. And all that is wrong. They don't have the power, the authority to do that. I don't know where the constitutional authority comes from that they make that up themselves. But I think the Constitution is clear that these federal judges are appointed. They're appointed by the president. And if they're not appointed, I don't see how they have any authority in a court. But in any event, you know, some years ago, when I was trying to understand these things, and I talked with a lawyer a little bit about this, and they had made, no, matter of fact, we learned this in our course. We took a course, and we learned this in the course that when you go into a federal court, jurisdiction changes as the conversation moves along, okay? And so you can be in one jurisdiction, and all of a sudden discussing, and it moved into another jurisdiction. And so they need to be able to understand that and know that, and they can't, because they don't have the proper education for that. And so, you know, people do need to be taught as lawyers to do these things. And the problem with the American Bar Association is that they are teaching subversion. They are teaching the destruction of the common law. And the United States Supreme Court is a culprit with that. They have participated in that, and that's why we took it to the doors of the United States Supreme Court. It's their duty to fix this problem. They can order all 94 federal district courts to make available, and they can put the paper up. After all, they do forms all the time. Create a form, stick it out there, and let the people have a form to open up a court of record, because right now they're concealing it, and that's 20 years in jail. That's what the law says for concealment. And what greater thing that you could do, the most damage, than to conceal courts of record? You know, concealing a document is 20 years in jail. How much more should be for concealing a court of record? To remove it from the people, and to do it covertly, and they did it covertly. And they have no problem talking about it. But anyway, going back to Roman law, that's what they believe we're under. And they called it civil law. They have fused together equity and law, which is like trying to put water and oil together, the law of God and the law of man, putting it together. It just doesn't work. But that's what they claim to have done. And they call it civil law. That's rule two. And so we're under civil law, which puts us under Roman law, which we don't belong under. That brings us right to Babylon, the mother of harlots, okay? Because this whole thing comes from Babylon. Civil law comes from Babylon, and it came into an individual named Justinian, kind of took things and rewrote it, and his name became associated with it, sort of camouflage it to cover it up. And then it moved into Roman law and civil law. And it's been back and forth, and they call it civil law. They refer to it as Roman law, and that's where we're at, the laws of men. And if you have civil law, you have civil rights. You know, you don't have unalienable rights. You have rights given by men, and therein is the big difference. Now, these courts, of course, of equity are necessary, and they need to be there, of course, because this governs all of our agencies. If it's on the federal level, it governs all the federal agencies. You know, even Congress is under statutes, regulations, and rules. I think that's, where is that? That is, Congress is under USC 2, Title 2. Okay? The president is governed by USC Title 3. You know, his powers and authority is described by, you know, the codes and statutes and regulations. Congress had the power and the authority to write this. We gave all the power in Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. You know, Title 6 controls Homeland Security. They have to. They can't go outside the jurisdiction. They can't go beyond the authorities given within these codes. So it is very important to have these codes to control them, to tie them down, to prevent them from going beyond the authority they're given. You know, U.S. attorneys didn't have the power, the authority to call forth a grand jury until the 1970s. I think it was 71 or 72. It was the early 70s. And before that, there was no authority. So they couldn't gather together a grand jury. And what does that mean? Who called the grand jury? You know, because generally speaking, going into history, it's the sheriff that calls the grand jury. And if the jury is going to be called, then there's a criminal act taking place. And I would imagine that has to take it right down to the state. And if the federal, even if it's a federal crime, I got to imagine they got to go through the sheriff. I'm not sure how that would even work. So we're trying to figure that out. Maybe when Brent takes the mic, maybe he has some knowledge of that, can share something for history, how that might work. But generally speaking, you know, the government is very, very restricted to the power and the authority when they apply it upon the people, okay? You know, if they're going to apply some kind of a criminal violation for someone that's doing something in commercial activity, you know, or interstate activity, human trafficking, for instance, which is a crime, of course, it's a federal offense, and clearly. So when they deal with these individuals, they still have to be indicted. My question is, and I'm trying to figure this out, does that therefore require them to be brought wherever that case was, whatever state and counties that conspired and took place in? does that have to go into the state court for the trial? You know, if it's an individual within the government, again, they're going into an equity court. The United States Supreme Court has that power and authority through their process. But again, if it becomes criminal, okay, I'm not sure how that works. Because the grand jury has to come to play here. And so who calls the grand jury for that? And then where is that trial taking place? But clearly, federal statutes would be proper to be applied in those cases because it is that jurisdiction and we gave it to them. But it cannot be applied against the people. We the people have to control this whole thing. And if we don't, then they will control it, and then the servant is judging the master. And where does that come from? No, we can only be judged by the king, and the king of the court is God himself. And he sends his people, you know, 12 individuals, okay, that's the king's bench. So he sends the people, to make the judgment, and we're to listen. And God tells us that he wrote his laws into our hearts, so we know right from wrong. And so we listen to the case, and then we try to figure it out, 12 of us, innocent or guilty. And that's the process. No political individuals permitted. The only one that would be in there is a magistrate. And again, they cannot make judicial decisions. And again, we've been robbed. The most important thing, the only thing that protects us as a people is our justice system. Our government will be as corrupt as our justice system. So if you want to know how corrupt our justice system is, just watch Congress. Look what they've been doing the past 3.5 years. Look at what's been going on. Look at what they've been getting away with for God knows how long, forever. Okay? So that tells you how bad our courts are. And so our government will be as just as our courts are. We have to bring justice back into our courts. And that's what we must do. Anyway, the filing of the paper we did, we're sending it up to the judge. The judge should be able to deal with these problems. They can write mandamuses. There's a law, we read about that, that if a subversion is to take place, that the law is that you, if you hear of subversion against the United States of America, you have to report that to some judge or the governor. That's what the law says. And here we are, we're reporting it to the judges. And they need to then take it from there. And I would imagine they would be going to the Justice Department and work with the Justice Department to take these people, these subverters, out. So that's where we're starting. And we did, again, we did send something to Pompeo, and if we can find the codes that gives him the authority and directs him what he needs to do, then we'll write a paper and direct him what he needs to do. We'll help him find it, and we'll expect that he does it. If all else fails, then it's up to we the people. Then we have a real serious, serious thing to think about as grand jurists. And that is, are we going to indict the individual justices on the United States Supreme Court? That's the serious question we have to consider. And we have to really seriously consider this because it may come down to that. I trust that President Trump, and I trust Barr, Attorney General Barr, and even Pompeo, that they are seeing the light. I listen to them talk, and I'm really blown away. I can't believe we have people like that in government that understand the Constitution so well and are saying the right things, the powerful things that people need to hear about our liberty. And I got to believe at the end of the day, they're going to reinstate the people back in to their power, to where it belongs, and we need to control those courts. So anyway, that's what we're doing, building administrations in every county, four individuals in every county to bring together the juries when needed, whether it's a grand jury or trial jury, and to orientate them, to prepare them. You know, they get 6 or 8 hours to orientate the jury. They even give them a book. And that's what they do, is they talk about that book, and the book is nothing but subversion. We have copies of those books on our websites. We've written memorandums on that. We've given them to the courts. They're destructive. They're Marxism. Clearly, even the questionnaires, they ask you questions like, what news do you listen to? Do you own a gun? Does your spouse own a gun? Does your parents own a gun? Do your friends own a gun? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Really bad, serious questions that they have no business asking. And again, they're profiling is what they're doing. And as Gerard said, they're using Facebook probably and Google and all that information. They already got that inside the, they know, a lot about you before you even step your foot into the courtroom. And then they'll see what you write on the paper and they'll figure out what they're going to do in order to get their way at the end of the day. So you're going in up against the judge. You're going in up against the jury. You're going in, even your lawyer's against you because he's obeying the judge. And there are backroom conversations, and there are things he can't or won't do because he'll lose his license. We'll see where that goes. So everyone should really work to try to get free at 11 a.m. September 25th. It's not going to be long. I doubt it'll go an hour. I really do. It's going to be very short, maybe a half hour or something like that. But I doubt it'll go over an hour. But please, anybody that can get free at 11 a.m. September 25th this year to call into the court, come in through the phones to do so, and then write an affidavit or whatever you feel you need to say in that affidavit, and sign it and get it before a notary signed, and send it in. We'll talk about those details. I will post a page up here with this information, and we'll post on there sort of a form on how to write an affidavit, and give a little bit of instruction. Just stick to the facts. Don't bloviate on it. Just get to the points. But everyone should struggle to get to that. Okay. Do we have any announcements to be made, Jan?
I don't think Jan has made it. His computer crashed a few minutes ago, and he's been trying to get it back up.
Okay. Are you aware of any questions or anything?
I did not compile the questions. I had to reboot my machine too. But Brent's here, and I think we ought to go to him.
Yeah, we'll go to him in a few minutes. All right, so we'll push those off till next week, questions and stuff. I didn't expect to be on the mic this long, I thought I'd be on maybe 20 minutes or so. But before we move over to Brent, let me just bring this up again, and we're talking about our book. There are people out there with deep pockets, okay? Anybody, we're looking to collect $10,500, that's the cost to go through the process through the publisher and get the books out, and you know, they call around to get try to get our books into the different chains and so on and so forth. So we need to try to collect some money. There's going to be another bill coming up, $5,500, that we're going to need, and I don't have that, and we've got to get put it together. Also, we have a campaign going on for sheriffs. So let me get to our front page, and we'll get to that. But anyone that can give even $5 to assist that, click on, let me just click on that real quick. I'll open it in a different link here, different tab. But just click on the link, and you'll go to a form where you just fill out the information, what your donation might be, and send it to National Liberty Alliance. And we will be sending a book, copy of the book. We're looking to send a book, copy of the book, to all 3,100 sheriffs, which is approximate, a little over 3,000 sheriffs. But anyway, we will be sending, of course, the president a book, Vice President Pence, Attorney General Barr, all of the United States Supreme Court justices, General Flynn, Representative Devin Nunes, Representative Jim Jordan, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Chuck Grassley, Senator John Kennedy, Senator Mitch McConnell, Senator Rand Paul, Kellyanne Conway, Kaylee McEnany. I've been listening to Bill Rowley. He's been pretty good lately. I just happened to decide to listen to him for a while, and maybe he's come around in his old days, you know? But anyway, send him a book. Sean Hannity, he's been a pretty good friend with the president, and he seems to be seeing what's going on these days now, so we figure send him a book. And Greg Hunter, Dave from X22 Report, and then, of course, all 3,000-plus county sheriffs. Now, going back to our front page here, we asked people to donate to this also, and everybody should be doing this. We need to get a book to your sheriff. You know, someone was talking a little earlier about the sheriffs and Sheriff Darr, and that they were involved with, the movement. He was a pretty bold sheriff, so on and so forth. Well, Sheriff Darr has been working with us, and he's been getting sheriffs together and trying to inform them, to make them informed sheriffs to look at the Constitution and learn. And he said that he will write a letter as an introduction to this, sheriff to sheriff, concerning this book. And so we need to get this into the hands of all 3,000-plus sheriffs. So it's up to you to get a book to your sheriff. So this is our campaign for constitutional sheriff. It's on our front page. Just click on it. I need to put it on the right-hand side. I'll put it there, too. But you click on this, and we explain particularly about our project here. We ask people to join the campaign to educate our sheriffs by donating a copy of the book, Government by Consent. And it's 1,000 pages. It's a very rich book, and it's not going to put you to sleep. It's not going to bore you to tears like most of these courses. This is going to be uplifting and really intense and deep. But let me just read a little bit this here. It is the duty of the people to self-educate, educate their sheriff, and educate our children. This is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. Join us to save our republic by returning America to a government by consent of the governed via an education. And we did do a 7-minute video. Let's see, it's only a 7-minute video, which gives a little bit of information about this. And if you come down to this page a little lower, you can click here to print out the order form. That should pop into another tab. And basically, the book I thought originally was going to be $39.95, which I thought was high, but I figured would cover the shipping and handling and so on. But they did tell me, last week I found out that it's going to be $48.95. That's what's going to be on the book. It's going to sell for $48.95. So we're asking for $50 per book. We'll take a little bit of a loss with the shipping and handling, we'll send it out to each sheriff. So in order to pre-order the book, a couple of things with this. First of all, we want to get a book to the sheriff. Second of all, One of the requisites in order to get onto a bestsellers list is to have sell over 5,000 books. Okay, and it is true, you know, it's going to be hard to get on certain bestsellers books. This book particularly, bestsellers list. This book particularly, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? That's in God's hand ultimately. But we do want to try to sell 5,000 books before it comes out to print. So anybody who can purchase a book, they should purchase for themselves, but definitely purchase one for your sheriff. Make it a Christmas gift, and we'll even stick a little Christmas card in maybe at the time, because it'll be around Christmas time. But so we need the sheriff's name, so you just got to put the basic information, not the name, but we need the sheriff's, the county. We don't need the sheriff's name, because one sheriff may be coming out, another sheriff coming in. We want the sheriff that's in or coming in to get that book. So we only need the county. We got it, the sheriff of whatever county it is. And then, of course, the address, which will give us your city, state. But sheriff of Dutchess County, and then what his address is, and the city and state and zip for them. And, of course, your information also. Print clearly. Give us your phone and email so if we had to contact you. And on the same form, you can not only just order one for your sheriff, you can get one for yourself. So if you want additional books, you just fill in one or two or whatever it is, put the numbers there and total and close and send it in. And we will mail it directly to the sheriff with an introductory letter by another sheriff. Going back to the page here, you can look into details. If people want to get a good flavor of the book, we did put the copy of the preface here, and you can click on that, and it opens up in a PDF, and this is the preface of the book. It's 15 pages, and this is a good introduction to the book of what you're going to be learning and seeing and hearing about. You're going to learn a lot here, let me tell you, and it's a good reference book, especially if you're a pro se in the courts. This is a great book. I'm thinking of writing another book, which will be Court Access, and I'll give a lot of tools and things that I've been putting together for years. And I'll try to put it together in a way that you can get great access to this very quickly by in the book through not only maybe a table of contents, but maybe we'll do something a little more in-depth. But in any event, even this book here, with a table of contents, you can get around the book pretty quick and see the things we cover. Government by Consent, Chapter 2 is on the law, 3, American History, 4, the Grand Jury and the Petit Jury, 5 is the History of the Sheriff. 6 is on the court. 7 is introduction to the founding documents, getting into the Declaration of Independence. We get into detail, the history, a little bit of trying to explain some of the difficult things, and we give tons and tons and tons of sources. Everything we got here, we give sources, and you can rest assured, and you can trace everything down and see this is the law, this is who we are, this is our heritage. And anyway, we cover a lot of things. This is the table of contents I'm scrolling through, so it's very powerful, huge amount of information in here. And also we give a lot of references to different things on our website where other information could be found and other educational tools and audio books with also you can read along with it and listen to videos, all kinds of things. It's a tremendous source. So anyway, everybody needs to get involved here. We need to get our sheriffs educated, and we need to become educated, and we have to educate our children. Please get involved. Get a book, send it in as soon as you can, and pre-order it, and we'll be preparing, and as soon as it becomes released, we will get the books out quickly to all of the sheriffs and anybody else who has ordered them. And then after that, you'll be able to click here and order it directly through the publisher or maybe online. There'll be different ways. We're selling it in many different ways. But we do also really, it's very important for us to get on the bestsellers list, because if we get on the bestsellers list, we're going to be in all the chains and we'll be in the libraries and everything. So this book will really get out there. And I do believe we have a very powerful introduction or preface that when people skim through that, they're going to want, if they have the interest in this particular subject matter and they're looking at the book, and even if they don't, maybe we'll give them the interest by reading through that. Because that's the first thing you do to buy a book. You know, you look at the back cover, you look a little bit, you look at the preface to see the flavor of the book, and then decide on whether you're going to buy it or not. And but we need to go to critical mass. We're coming up on 9,000 members right now, but we need critical mass. This book, I believe, is the opportunity to have that critical mass. We can get out to the general public. We can reach people that are not aware of us. And by the way, people should be getting the word out. Anybody listening to this message should be getting the word out to others, getting people to this website, getting people to our YouTube channel, which, by the way, our YouTube channel, again, let me go there. Let's see YouTube. If you go to YouTube.com, put / National Liberty Alliance. Let's see if I spelt that right. National Liberty Alliance. Yep. .org. Oop. Oh no, there's no .org. I'm sorry. Go to YouTube, National Liberty Alliance, and you click on that, and there you are at our site. Now we've again we've posted these three videos, which is the meetings, weekly meetings. And I believe we posted four. One of them they shut down. They wouldn't allow through because of a violation. We're actually on violation on all three of them, so we're going to be taking them down tonight or tomorrow and putting them up back up there without the song, because that's what violated us on with YouTube. So we'll just take the song out in the beginning of our program. Everything else is, you know, us. We're not using anybody's things other than history. So people should come out here and take a subscription, help us build up the numbers so that people will start seeing us out there and hearing about us and listening to our weekly calls. But we have a tremendous amount of videos up here, lots and lots of videos if you go through here. I think I can work this out. I got to get in here to try to organize this a little better, because I think there's ways we can organize these videos. But we have lots and lots of videos here. I've been posting videos up here for goodness, years and years, years, a long time. And these are powerful, powerful videos, documentaries. We've been following, you know, this subversion in the United States here for many, many years. And so all of these videos, you know, are powerful. It's unfortunate we don't get that many views, but I really been using this in order to post videos onto our website. So when we take the link, we take the videos from here and we put them up on our website, and then you watch videos throughout our website. We've got lots of videos up there. But you can see here, some of these videos go back here 6 years ago when we posted this one. I know we go back even further than that. This is about when we were starting, around this time we were starting with National Liberty Alliance back around here. Anyway, tremendous amount of information, tremendous amount of videos, very informative. It really lays out how we got to where we're at and how we're going to get out of this. And again, National Liberty Alliance is doing more than just trying to teach people how to have consent of government. We're laying out the process of taking control of the courts and taking control of our political process, which is having government by consent. If we're not doing that, then we have government by government's consent, because someone is making all these decisions in our courts and our political process, and who's getting onto the tickets, you know, to be elected for this or that. We the people need to be doing that, and we're not. We need to take that over. We need to rebuild our militias from the ground up, and that's another thing we're doing. We need to tie a relationship with our militias and our administrators and for the courts and the committee men for the political process, and bring them all together in every county, working with your sheriff, and people need to be doing these things from the grassroots level. What we need to do here at National Liberty Alliance is teach the people how to access these things, how to put these things together, and give them the proper education to be able to do the things, to have government by consent, to be able to go into a court and take care of your own business without a lawyer. And courts should cost $0 to get in. That's the law. It is not to, we're not to be paying any kind of thing. We already pay for the court building. We built those that court building. We're paying the salaries of all the individuals in that building and all the justices. We're paying for the computers. We're paying for the copy machines, the fax machines, all of the paper, the stationery. We're paying for everything already, the desks, the seats they sit on. We are already paying for that. Why are they going to charge us $400 to file a court case and then keep hitting us for every time you make a motion, another few dollars or whatever it is? Who are these people, you know? All right, anyway. I guess I've been talking long enough. Let me move on. Okay, I see Brent is here, so we're going to move over to Brent. Gerard, you got the controls here? If I can get back over to our page here. Gerard, you here? Would you walk away?
I got to find my unmute button.
Okay. All right. I'm going to unshare my screen in a minute when you're ready. Once Brent starts talking, maybe you want to share your screen, put us on our front page or wherever you want to put us.
Sure.
Okay? Yep. Are you ready to do that? I'll do that right now. I'll unshare if you're ready to take it over.
Wonderful.
Okay, and try to keep the page on until the end of the program because we are doing video audio together for YouTube uploads. And if you can move around the website as you're talking, that'd be good. And maybe I'll move around the website while you're talking. So I'm going to stop sharing. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm no longer sharing. You got it. Okay, we're going to move to Brent. Let me see if I can find... wrong way. I guess I lost my page here. Okay, Brent, I guess, is there, right? Brent, are you here? Yeah, he's in the queue.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, Brent Winters is going to talk with us. Brent Winters is a common law lawyer. He is the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law, and The Militia of the Several States, and numerous other books. And his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. This is Brent Allen Winters. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own, and I take responsibility for them. They may or may not agree with the principles of the National Liberty Alliance, but they're nice enough to let me say a few words. My father's house. My father and my mother. I'm fortunate I still have parents. And Dad told me that he'd never seen some buzzards hanging around the place. I know he's probably telling the truth, but he was saying that this coronavirus got people scared. Well, it does. Is it? Now they're always changing the name. Fastbite is by the time it's all said and done, Corona will not be what it's called. It'll be called COVID, which signifies a vaccine. I suppose the idea is we'll be accepting enough, we'll just take the vaccine. Well, just a word about it though. If I'm being heard, if I'm not, somebody tell me I'm hearing funny noises.
You're being heard. Let me request that nobody put any play any videos while we're going through this, sharing their pictures or whatever, because it does interfere with what's on our screen. But anyway, yeah, we hear you good. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, just to make a word about, step outside and walk uphill, I may get a better signal. Just make a word. Say a word about the effects of this virus, this so-called virus. I just read the other day that in California there have been just a mere 25 more overall deaths in California this year as there was last year. In other words, things haven't changed. 25 deaths out of the thousands and thousands and tens of hundreds of thousands that occur is so negligible as to be counted as de minimis and not countable at all. And where are the dead bodies? There are two places in America, again, if I'm still being heard, yes, I think I am, two places in America where if there isn't free speech, there won't be free speech anywhere else. And if you'll recall, that's one of the guarantees of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Freedom of speech is not what government gives us. What God gives us, governance over our tongues, comes as a flip side of a coin. Freedom of speech, freedom to speak when you think you ought to. And then the other side of the coin is the right to remain silent when you think you hadn't ought to. Both of those are two sides of the same responsibility of governance over your tongue that God gave you. Government didn't give that to you. And therefore, government has no jurisdiction to interfere in either one of those. As crazy as that may sound in some instances, as one fellow said, the price of freedom is sometimes the defense of idiots. Well, what people think are idiots. Maybe they aren't. Maybe they just think they are, but nonetheless, freedom of speech. Well, in these two places, if there isn't freedom of speech, there isn't going to be any anywhere. Number one, in the churches, in the assemblies, in the subpoenaed witness group that God subpoenas, called the church, the ecclesia, the called, the subpoenaed ones. And then second, in the courts. If there isn't freedom of speech in the courts, in the churches, there won't be freedom of speech anywhere. I find it of significant note that churches and courts are heavily targeted to be shut down. It's been going on for a long time. Courthouses have been progressively shut down to the point where people don't want to enter them. The reason they don't want to enter them is because they don't want to be hassled, harassed, or otherwise take a chance of getting arrested because they might have had a fingernail clipper or a pocket knife for cleaning their fingernails in their pocket. In the neighboring county where I'm from, the county board chairman, who had been there for years and years and years, when they put in the detectors and shook him down the first time he came to a county board meeting after that happened, he resigned and he says, I've been going into this courthouse for 60 years. I'm not going to be searched every time I go into it. That's not our courthouse. That puts a chill on what we call public trials. Those are not reasonable measures. Now, there are some courthouses around here that don't have any of that. None. They haven't had any problems. The ones that do it just cause trouble for us all and make us not want to go to the courthouse. For the same reason, of course, people don't want to travel. They don't want to fly. Freedom to travel. It puts what lawyers who practice in the area of constitutional law call it a chill. Puts a chill on the exercise of a fundamental right. Well, that's our courthouses. I get emails regularly now telling me what the new rules are for the courtrooms. And effectively, the federal courthouses and the state courthouses all over are shut down, except for emergencies. And even in those cases, those emergencies are so hampered by face masks, etc., you can't effectively cross-examine witnesses because you can't see the expressions on their faces. The jury can't observe the expressions. You know, right to a public trial, says the Constitution of the United States, is guaranteed in all criminal cases. Well, what if it's a non-criminal case? It seems to me that the Constitution of the United States says a lot of right things, but it omits to say some things that cause confusion. For instance, well, of course, it's not the Bible. They did a pretty good job putting it together. I'm all for it. But I'm the first to recognize, and always have been, that it's not the Bible. It, from the get-go, it's got some problems. One of the problems is it says in all criminal trials. Well, what about non-criminal trials? What's a non-criminal trial about? Well, a non-criminal trial is about loss of property. You have property at stake. Some right at stake. Property amounts to rights in property, and property amounts to rights. We have rights in our property, and property in our rights. Two are really synonyms. That's a non-criminal case. Well, in a criminal case, you stand to lose life, your life sometimes, your liberty, early in jail, and your property. Truth is, all three of those stand and fall together. To the degree you lose one, you lose the other. So what's the difference between a criminal trial and a non-criminal trial? Well, people say, but you might get thrown in jail in a criminal trial. Well, if you get thrown in jail, what do you lose? You lose rights in your property. What is your property? Your freedom. That's a property right, and it's a right in property and a property in right. You can't separate those things. A criminal trial, non-criminal trial, it needs to be guaranteed to be public. Those properties at stake in both of them. And public means you've got to be able to confront witnesses against you that are being put up to testify against you, to lose your property. How can you confront them? Confrontation, the confrontation clause of our Constitution means cross-examination. How do you do that? How do you effectively cross-examine a witness? And how do you get the effect you're hoping to get in front of the jury if they can't see the face of the witness, if they've got a diaper on their face? Can you imagine an Islamic woman testifying in court? Wouldn't work, see? Because to see the expression of the face is material, you know? It's necessary to discern better what's behind the words. Well, that's the courts. No right to free speech in our courts. There won't be free speech anywhere, and if there's no free speech, no exchange of ideas, just like we're doing right now. I'm talking, and you have the option of listening or not listening, whatever you want to do. But I am given the mic for a little bit, and I can talk. Well, that's the courts. Then the other place where speech has to be had, experienced, if there's going to be freedom, is the churches. Churches. There are churches all over America, as I speak, that are being shut down. I'm wondering if anybody's hearing me, trying to find out. Yeah, maybe you are. I'll keep talking. Churches all over America are being shut down.
Yeah, we hear you, Brent.
Oh, thank you, Terry. Because I'm in a place where I know I'm walking at night on a country road. I'm going uphill a little bit. It ought to be getting better. But churches all over America are being shut down. The following one, it's the church where Johnny Mack preaches. I used to call him John Mack. I didn't understand why other people didn't call him John Mack. It was easier than saying John MacArthur. And then somebody told me Sunday, well, they've been calling him Johnny Mack for a long time, ever since R.C. Sproul. Ever since R.C. Sproul's memorial service. And Sproul was the one that started calling him Johnny Mack. Well, Johnny Mack preaches at a church on Roscoe Boulevard in the San Fernando Valley in Southern California. Yeah. Not far from North Hollywood and all those places. big church, 6,000-7,000 people on a Sunday morning, two services. It's been that way for over 40 years. And worse, like most churches, there's another church in Santa Clara, California, has thousands of people come to it. Maybe that's a Southern Baptist church. All those kind of places maintain good relationships with the government, the county, the city. They like them to be in the community. It's a good influence, of course. That's the way they look at it. Of course, they have a constitutional right to be there. That's changing now. And the governor of California, the city of Los Angeles, the county of L.A., have brought drug Johnny Mac and the elders of the church into court. One thing they're not understanding is Johnny Mac isn't the one that's making that decision to hold the services. They're trying to shut him down. He doesn't make that decision. The elders of the church make that decision. Of course, he's the upfront guy that people think he runs everything. Well, they can't really jail him for that because of that. But what they're doing now is they've lost in court twice trying to shut down the church services. We're talking freedom of speech here. And so the next move is now they're saying, well, you've been renting the land for the parking lot around that church for the last 40 years. You've been renting that land, and it belongs to the county, and you've been renting it from us. And we're going to end the lease. Of course, I thought, how can they do that if it's a lease? Well, it must be a clause in it or something that says they can do it for cause with 30 days notice. And they're saying cause is the pandemic, the plandemic. Well, what people don't say, of course, is the rest of the story is always there. Matters like this can get real personal. And I remember seeing, can't remember whether I said anything about this last week or not, but I remember seeing a few years ago, Johnny Mack on Larry King Live with the fellow now governor of California. At that time, he was mayor of Frisco. Now, I always say Frisco. Chicks the people off there. They say it's San Francisco. No, it isn't. It's Frisco to me. I tell them that's what I did when I was there, too. Well, at any rate, when he was on Larry King Live, Johnny Mack just very matter-of-factly said, you believe the Bible, don't you? And Newsom said, well, yes. Well, you're Roman Catholic, aren't you? Oh, yes, I'm Roman Catholic. You believe the Bible? Oh, yeah, I believe the Bible. And the Bible says sodomy is against the law. God hates it. How can you sensibly claim to be a Romanist and a Bible believer and promote sodomy in San Francisco? You're inconsistent, you're wrong. He humiliated him, not by badgering him or bullying him, just making those statements. It was humiliating. You could tell watching. He didn't know what to say. He didn't say anything. He was silent. He was silenced, I guess the way to say it. Well, now this is Newsom. He's governor, and that's what politics is all about. Politics is all about revolution. Revolving round and round and round. You're in power. I'm in power. You're in power. I'm in power. When I get in power, I do everything I can to jail and kill everybody. They try to jail and kill me, and it flips the other way. You want to know how politics works? Read or watch Lew Wallace's novel. He wrote a novel called Ben-Hur and a book, and Charlton Heston, they made a movie out of it. That's politics, and that's why he wrote that book. He became governor of New Mexico, governor of the New Mexico Territory after the war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states. And he had finally got a belly full of all the politics. He had been a general in the Union Army, and he was a territorial governor, and he got a belly full of it, and he said, this is vicious revolving, it never stops. There's no winning. Well, will the revolving ever stop? I'm amazed. It's been going on ever since I can remember. And the issues, the questions never change. I remember when I was a political animal back in the 90s, deeply involved, the questions that were in front of us that we talked about constantly were gun control and abortion. Well, 20 years before that, that was the question that were in front of the American public, and that's all they talked about. And still, what's the questions in front of the American public? Well, there are many. But fundamentally, it's still abortion and the Second Amendment, gun control. Are we getting anywhere? No, we're not making any headway at abortion, or worse. I'm hearing that old hoot owl. Can you hear him out there? We haven't made any progress. We're going backwards, if anything, on both of those questions to a great degree. We've come forward a little bit. I shouldn't say entirely with the Heller decision. The Heller decision has brought us forward a little bit. But the main thing I wanted to stress this evening was that only two places, the two places that are indispensable to freedom of speech in America, and the evil empire is doing all it can to shut them down now. What do we do? Here's what we do. Don't get involved. I tell people, government's one thing, politics is quite another. There's no sense getting involved in politics. You're on a merry-go-round. You're going to get hurt. That's what's going to happen. So how do you deal with all these problems? You get off a merry-go-round. Get away from the politics of the matter, the viciousness of I'm going to get the other guy. That's what politics is. It's my turn now to dominate you. Jesus Christ said, do not be as the nations, the princes of the nations, who seek to dominate one another. That's what the evil empire is all about. That's what the law of the city is all about. The law of Rome, the law of Babylon. Remember, the law of Rome, the code of Justinian, governs almost every country in the world, and it creeps in here. And people get that attitude here. They're going to crush the opposition. They're going to get vengeance. That's politics. Vengeance is looking backwards. Just looking backwards with no thought of the future, of making things better. That's politics. Don't get caught up in that and Kamala, Harris said she's going to get everybody. Look out, she said. You supported Trump, we're coming for you. You better beware. See, that's politics. What happens to people like that? Well, they die in the end, like that fellow in Ben-Hur. In a chariot race, he got stomped to death. And then he said, as he was dying, he said to Charlton Heston, remember, he said, the contest is not over. You know, he wanted, while he was dying, to make sure that Heston knew that he was going to get in another lick. Man, I don't want to live like that. That's what politics is. So let's think about the future. Think about bettering the future. How do you do that? Well, you learn the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. The more you know about them, the more you're likely to do them. You get it in your head. You get it in your blood. You talk about it. You read about it. You think about it, how it applies. And don't think about vengeance. Vengeance, the Bible says, belongs to the Lord. Him and him alone, him and no other, him and no more, not to me, not to you. Ours is the future. And if we look to the future, Ronald Reagan did a good job of stressing that, stressing the future. He didn't talk about, and wisely, he didn't talk about avenging the past. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Thank you for your attention. Thank you, John. Thank you, Gerard. Gerard, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay. I got to go back here to my control panel, and somebody else might want to share screen while I'm on the control panel, because otherwise everybody's going to see the control panel if I go there now. I'm going to stop screen sharing here. And so that I can see how many people are in the queue, because right now I can't see nothing. Bear with me a minute. Okay. I'm ready.
I'm having a real tough time hearing you, Gerard. Are you talking?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Barely.
Really?
Barely. Go ahead.
I don't know.
Gerard, did we lose you?
Anybody there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, let's try this. I don't know what's going on. I got a lot of, must have a lot of memory out there or something missing because I'm jumping all over the place. Okay, now I'm going to go ahead to the question and answer. I just wanted to say, you know, I think it was today the CDC came out with revised numbers and they said the deaths were from this virus, they revised them down to 6%. You know what that means? That means this wasn't even really a pandemic. It was less than the normal flu season that we get. See, they're starting to back up now because they know that the writing's on the wall. So they very quietly didn't make big fanfare, but that was, you know, of course the alternative news caught it and plastered it all over the place, which is good. It's good that they're out there operating. They're actually getting through in spite of the fact that they're doing everything in their power to keep any kind of good news or news against the deep state from coming out there. They really must be desperate. So anyway, if everybody can hear me okay, I'm going to go ahead and open up the first question, first caller. That would be Kevin from New York. Go ahead, Kevin. You've been unmuted.
Okay. Can you hear me? Testing.
Oh, I can. You're wall to wall.
Ah, very good. Very good. Yes, my question involves using your private conveyance and the driver's license. I've done a couple things to try and protect myself, and one of them was filing notices against the New York State Department of Motor Vehicle. A couple notices were sent, and no answer. Then I sent out the affidavit of default, and the default was done. Also, I had prepared for myself a affidavit of status, active state requirement to perform, which is a affidavit with some 12 or 13 statements on it that's been notarized. I just wanted to find out from you guys, you know, the law is on our side in that there are quite a few things in regards to travel and using the vehicle as a private conveyance to transport personal goods and not using the vehicle in a commercial status. Is there anything else that I could do to protect myself? And also, do we have any sort of connection with the sheriff that could be used if necessary? Hello? Hello? Oh, boy.
I think I heard you.
Oh, good, good.
He has a challenge on getting his mic unmuted sometimes. So just give it a second.
Hang on. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Got you.
I don't know why this thing keeps cutting out, but I'll go for it. Okay, first thing I'll say is the only way to protect yourself at all after you do all that, and if you happen to have a face-to-face meeting with your sheriff and explain what you're trying to do, you have no protection because they are not going to give you something on your license that says that you are you know, that you're allowed to do that. And the only one that's going to leave you alone is an officer that is educated, which is like maybe 0.1%, you know. So you're right, you do have the law on your side. And yes, if you took it all the way up to federal court, you might prevail. We do have some people we know of some people that get away with that. And one of them was Michael Bagnarek, who we carry his constitutional course on our website. And he's very good. You know, he knows the Constitution right off the cuff. And he has plates that say not, you know, he has plates he made up himself, not for hire. Everybody in his county knows him, and he sued them, and he's won, and it cost them money. So they've been told, don't pull him over. You know what I mean? Because it's like poking at a bee's nest. But the minute he leaves his area, he's going to be harassed. And the thing is it, you got to pick your battles. How much do you want? I used to follow this couple. It was called Brad Barnhill. And he was all about the UCC and all this stuff. He knew all the laws. And him and his wife spent half their life in jail. I mean, and that's how they made their living. Because then they'd sue them and they'd get out. And they'd go down, they'd go 30 miles down the road in the next town and pull them over, you know. So it's a matter of education, I guess you could say. So it depends on how many people, how far you want to educate them. You know.
In New York City, you got a lot of, there's a lot of cops and a lot of precincts, and it's a rough deal educating. I mean, in a small town, I can understand in a small town it may work, but here it's a different
game. You're going to be in a different precinct every night. You're going to get to know every jail.
Yeah, I think so, you're right.
I don't advise it because, you know, look at, you want to go from A to B and you don't want to be harassed, and they make you get this license, which is really for commercial stuff, and you're not operating in commerce, and you know, nevertheless they believe that you need it, and like Bill Thornton says, there's nothing so frightful as ignorance in action, and they have the guns, and so they can bust your head and handcuff you and throw you in jail, and yes, you will eventually prevail if you hold on and your lumps heal, and you can make some money, but you could end up spending the better part of a year in jail. You know?
Sure. Okay, that was one part of my question. Next part is, let me ask you, is there any way that National Liberty Alliance can use the power of their numerous members to possibly one day numerous members approach the Department of Motor Vehicle and say, hey, this is our driver's license, this is the law, and we want identification that identifies us as people that are asserting our rights here.
Well, look, at all the cases that we have put in court actually address exactly that. Because once we get in the courts as the people, as the sovereigns, that's all going to go away. Even I believe that Trump even understands this whole driver's license thing. It's not his priority, and it's not our priority either, because when freedom comes, it's going to come as a flood. The first domino is going to fall, and that's one of the things that are going to go down. And it's going to go down because, you know, the whole scheme and scam that they made to do it. It's like Dorothy tapping her heels together. She had the power along. When people realize that title, that they're titling the car to the state, and that you don't own it, and then eventually they're not going to do that anymore. They're going to get the certificate of origin, and they're not going to title it, and they're not going to put plates on it. You know, it's the same thing with the IRS. If you're going to go and fill out a 1099 and a W-4 and all that stuff says, I'm a taxpayer, I swear under pain of perjury, penalty of perjury, that I'm a taxpayer. And then you go in and go, I don't pay taxes, I'm a sovereign. They're going to say, you signed the contract, and you said you know what you were doing. You see? That's how they get you. And of course, you say, yeah, but they wouldn't hire me otherwise, you know. And we
My driver's license is expired. It's done.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Guess what? They get you for aggravated unlicensed, and I know guys around here, just local guys that have done that.
Okay, I need to...
You know...
Hang on.
You know, if you like you said, if you were in a small town or something where everybody knows everybody, and you only got a limited number of law enforcement roaming around, you could probably get away with it. But those days are not going to be here for a while yet. I have kind of confidence that I'm going to live to see that. You know, either we're going to see that and have freedom, or we're going to have. Road warrior type thing, complete anarchy, where you're not going to worry about You're not going to worry about plates and all that other stuff, because when the government goes down, nobody worries about anything. You know what I mean? So
yeah, okay.
And that's, you know, there's a certain freedom to that, but there's also a certain terror to that, because then there's no peace, and you better carry your gun. You're living in the jungle again. It's like the law, you know what I mean? It's the strong survive. The whole reason we put government in is to protect the weak from the strong, right? So if mm-hmm. we throw all the government out, then what happens? Then what happens is the strong abuse the weak. Always, men always do what they tend to do, and they can't help themselves. So if you get a big, strong guy, and he realizes, why should I listen to them? I two kicks, I could take all three of them out. You know.
Right. So let me ask you. So there is real no approach that the National Liberty Alliance has that has worked that I could use to gain my freedom here.
We have not done it. I have heard rumors, but I have never seen it, of people that go through this whole process, this secure party creditor process, and eventually they get diplomatic status that. If they get pulled over, it says on their license, do not stop, do not detain.
Do not detain, yep.
Right, so, you know, is that for real? I'm sure that diplomats have that. I'm sure that, I'm almost willing to bet that, like, Hillary Clinton probably don't have a license. She doesn't worry about it. She's probably got one of those licenses. But, you know, it's like George Carlin said, it's a club, and you ain't in it. You know? So,
all right.
But we will get there, and it's going to happen probably quicker than you think it is, because when the stuff that's really killing us goes down, the rest of it's going to go down. Because especially that, you know, look at Department of Motor Vehicles, think about it. I mean, what do you need it for? I mean, commercial driving, truckers and stuff, that'll still be there because they're going to regulate them. People doing things commercially, but you and I, you know, they're going to have to get rid of that whole Department of Motor Vehicles, at least, you know, on a statewide scale or whatever they're going to do. I don't know, but it's not necessary for we the people. And once people are woke, then what's going to happen is gradually they'll understand that, gee, what do I need this license for? Why am I carrying all this stuff? Because the state at that point will know. They're not going to tell you, because if you're dumb enough to do it, you know, until everybody learns, I mean, that's how they got away with it in the beginning, anyway. It happened gradually, and the people were asleep. So before you know it, then everybody was in it, you know. I mean, there wasn't any licenses back, way back in like the 20s, I don't think. You got in your car and you drove it, and your dad showed you how to drive it, and you went to town. You know, and then they said, well, you know, you should get insurance because now you're going on the road. If you hit somebody, you know, you should have proof of insurance. You know, if you're going to drive this thing, you have a responsibility. And that's all true. But, you know, can they force you to do it? You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the process was when they first got people registering and insuring their cars. But, I mean, I don't think I would drive a car without insurance on it because it's foolhardy. It is a big, you know, 2,000-5,000 pound weapon, kind of like, you know, machine that could get away and kill people and do property damage and physical damage. So you certainly want to be insured in case that happens. You don't want to lose your house, right? It's just prudent, right? And I mean, basically, you know, in a free society, you're liable for the damage that you do, you know. Your freedom ends where mine begins, and if you're stepping on my toe, you owe me restitution. So if there's an injured party, that's the basis of law, then there has to be remedy. So, of course, you would want insurance in case you injured somebody, you know, even accidentally. You're still liable if it's your fault. But I don't know how long that's going to take, and God bless all those people that are pushing it now, because that might make it happen a little quicker, the more people get out there and do that. But I'm going to tell you right now, in New York City, if you do that, and even what you've already just done, they have you labeled as a sovereign citizen. And I'll tell you what, that's a dangerous thing. See, we can't get them to put on our licenses that we are sovereign and we are, like, we have diplomatic immunity, so to speak. We actually have sovereign immunity. We don't have diplomatic immunity. But they'll put on your license that you're a sovereign citizen so that when the cop comes up, he's got his hand on his gun, and they got you labeled a kook. And so now it's a danger because once they give you that name, and I if you could find out that they labeled you sovereign for doing that, because that's what they do, you should sue the pants off of them. So if you already filed some affidavits and stuff like that, they may have you down in a system. The trouble is they won't. It's not in the motor vehicle system. It's in the FBI system, and they will not let you look at those records. You know what I mean? Those are secret. You're not allowed to know what we have you listed as. You know. So I mean, I wouldn't worry too much about it, but I'm just telling you, there's a danger to doing it. And you know, and if they got you labeled as that, you know, and they train these. They got the Southern Poverty Law Center training the police officers that if somebody's driving around with cardboard plates that say not for hire, be careful, because this is a cop killer. He's a sovereign citizen. So, and we fought with them a little bit too, because they had us labeled as a terrorist organization. And, you know, we made them take it off. But, you know, we got to check it. You know, I don't know if we're back on it or not, but, you know, at some point the police officers are going to learn that whole Southern Poverty Law and a couple of the other ones that they rely on are all full of baloney, and they won't pay attention to them anymore. You know, but, you know, the one that gives them the credibility is the FBI. And what's the most corrupt organization in America today with James Comey and all the guys on top? It's the FBI and the CIA. So, and, you know, as the top of that gets straightened out, it will filter to the bottom, to us. And timing is everything, and you'll know when it's time to put your cardboard plates on. Believe me, you'll know. Okay? So, that's all I got to say about that. All right? I don't know if I helped you at all or not. Can you hear me, or am I, like, gone in Never Never Land?
We hear you.
Oh, okay. Okay, Kevin? I lost Kevin. I put him to sleep. Well, anyway, I'm going to... That's all I have on that subject, so I'm going to go ahead and move to my next one, which looks like Nakel, Blanchard Nakel. You've been...
Yeah, it's Eli. That's probably my wife's phone.
Okay. Okay, Eli.
So my question was with the news card, Quo Mandamus, or whatever, the 50 juries, put all these papers together.
Yeah, the
Mandamus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they served the papers. What would be an expected or normal time frame that you would expect them to respond, and how should they respond?
Well, we give them, I think there's a time frame built into the paper, if I remember right. You know, they have so many days. Well, usually with the government, they take a certain amount of time. They get longer than we do because everything in government moves slower. But we've given them, like, sometimes we only give them 20 days. But they usually get 30, you know?
Yeah, my assumption, though, is that they don't care what you wrote to them, and they're not going to listen, and they're, you know what I mean, they're not going
to
cooperate and follow
the law. They have to respond, though. We do not let them get away without responding, because if they don't respond, then guess what? Then they defaulted. Then you won. Then you put it in your letter of default. On something like a mandamus or whatever, huh?
I think that they don't care about you, and they don't care about doing.
Well,
if
you file a case, they have to answer. They have never not answered us. When we file an information or a mandamus that doesn't require an answer, like a lot of the times we're just giving them instructions, and now they can't say they didn't know. I mean, we don't always have everything we file doesn't have a wherefore clause. It doesn't have a time to run out. What it is it's like we sent you this notice on this day, so now you can't claim that you didn't know. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So you sent
them a few bits of information, and you told them, you know, heads up, this and this and this is the law, and you guys are breaking the law. And so basically from
and then
what
they do is they come in on rule two and they say, you can't do that, you're not lawyers, or whatever, rule two, this, that. I mean, that the big case we have in right now, the judge claims that we're kicked out, that he dismissed the case. under probably Rule 2, I don't remember. And we told them, you can't dismiss that. And we indicted him, and we sent an indictment. And I believe we sent a decision in order. And he said, stop sending papers in on this case. And we said, you can't tell us that. So we kept sending papers in. And you know what the clerk did?
What?
The clerk has been filing them. Because the clerk knows better than the clerk is. We sent the clerk information about you can't take these papers and throw them away because there's 20 years in jail for you. You know, and if the judge, and so they're still filing our papers under that docket number that they claim is dismissed, but yet papers go in. So for now, we're not pushing the issue. We're stacking papers up in the court because they're on file and they're on record, and that's a good thing. I mean, that's kind of that's a half victory, no? They are still accepting our paperwork, and at some point, it is going to come to a head. You know,
So you're going to tell them, we served you this paper, now you're liable to obey it, and since you haven't been obeying it, now you're indicted.
Yeah, indicted, and we're coming up with some new stuff now. I don't want to blow John's thing out of the water, but we're coming up with some stuff about, you know, well, we were experimenting with this notice of liability stuff, which is a good thing to do too, where you put them on a notice of liability because they're causing certain damage. But the other thing is they are disqualifying themselves from office by violating their oath of office. And that's another wrinkle that we've discovered that we're working on with some people that have come to us recently. And it looks like it's very much easier than getting an indictment filed in a court and having a trial. All you got to do is document the fact that they, you know, they did this or they said that, and then send it in, I think, to the Secretary of State or something to that. And I'm not going to explain it right now because that's the subject of next week. And they're done.
Okay.
And they're out of office for life, and it can never go away unless Congress says.
Have you seen it ever work out that way, though? Like, you do these papers, you do give them the indictment. After they're indicted, is it immediate? Is it that day? Does it actually work out how it's supposed to, and they actually get out of office?
No. When we indicted them, I mean, look at it. Let's say they got one of their puppet grand juries and they indicted somebody. It would be effective immediately, would it not?
If they
did a normal indictment, if they did an indictment with one of their puppet grand juries, their law provides for it. Like a lot of these positions, if a judge is indicted, I don't believe that he can sit on a bench until the charges go away because he's in bad behavior. If he's been indicted for a crime that affects his oath of office, which means he's in violation of the Constitution, he can't sit there. He's done. He's done from the day that the indictment is served on him, right?
Okay, so have you ever seen them be indicted and also be removed the same day? Like, does that actually
No, we haven't seen them. We haven't seen any of them be removed as far as I know. Not at the federal level where we're dealing. You know, it might have happened. I've heard stories on some of the more local stuff that it's happened, but you need enforcement for that. You need a sheriff. You need a DA. You need people to go along with that. And at the federal level, we don't have it yet. Well, actually, we probably do have it. It's coming to a head right now. Look, don't forget, Donald Trump put in 455 district court judges. You know, there's like, I think there's, I was talking to John about this today, as a matter of fact, I think it was, that there's like 900 total Supreme Court judges in the United States. And Trump just put in 450, and he's got more to put in. So, and I think what's happening is they're getting some of these judges out, going after them the exact same way I just told you, telling them that, look at you, we got this information on you, and you violated your oath, and you need to step down. And that's how he's doing it. He's having them, in other words, he's not arresting them. He's not indicting them. He's going to them in the dark and saying, look, we got all the goods on you. Leave or we're going to press charges. And they leave, and then he appoints another judge. And there's a reason for that, because if everything happened all at once the way it could happen, because the evidence is there, It would make trouble. We could have a revolution, or they would start yelling that he's a dictator and let's call the UN in and blah, blah, blah. Right?
Oh, okay. So they're just trying not to make it too big of a move, all of it. So
yeah.
It's not a disruption of the people.
That's right. I mean, it's going to come to a head at some point. When he gets rid of all those judges, it's going to be good for us. And like I said, you're gonna be able to put your cardboard plates on, you'll know when. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Everybody's gonna know at the same time, because that's the way it's gonna go down. You know what I mean? So I think there's light at the end of that tunnel. I can't tell you when, but I see more and more every day stuff happening, right?
Okay.
And we've never had this before. You know what I'm saying?
One more quick question. I actually got to go right now. I'm into it. I like the movement. I want to help out. If I was to donate money on the site, does it matter to you guys if I buy the book or just donate on the donate tab or give money however the site direct me to?
Any way you can get it to us is good. Right now,
okay. We're
in the book campaign. We're pushing that. We think it's very important to get the sheriffs those books, right?
Right. So, but if I donate money to you, you can go ahead and use that money for the books, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We have the ability to look at it. If we have a couple counties that didn't get books for some reason and we have extra money, that's what we do. We always do that. We're always robbing Peter to pay Paul, always. You know?
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
And we operate on the widow's mite, too. So believe me, we're very frugal with it. So any way you can do it, we appreciate it. All right?
Sounds good. Thank you. Got to go.
Okay. Yep. Have a good night. Okay. Cynthia from Massachusetts, you are on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. I had a little trouble hearing you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I just have a couple of questions. The first one is, I ran across a document that came out of the Secretary of State, Pompeo's office, and it came out in draft form in July, and it's a document called the Commission on Unalienable Rights. I just love it. So anyway, the reason I came up is because and this involves the UN at some level. I guess a lot of Americans or a lot of people are running to the UN for help of lawlessness. I know, and the whole thing is crazy to me because, you know, we should really take care of business here, but I can see people's desperation. So anyway, so the UN's kind of pushing on the U.S. So that's a little bit of the background, but this Commission on Unalienable Rights, I was wondering if NLA has seen the draft report, and I just printed it recently, so I haven't really read it yet, but in general, just based on Pompeo's speech, which sounds pretty good, you know, he's stressing particularly religious freedom and property rights. So both of them are really dear to, you know, what we're struggling with. And property, I'm using it in the broad terms, you know, what property means. So I was just wondering if in LA, if we haven't yet read it, or if somebody can read it there and maybe even comment on it, because it sounds like it's up our alley.
From Pompeo?
Yeah, he set up a commission Commission on Unalienable, not in Unalienable Rights. I just love it. And so they just wrote a draft report and came out last month, and I wasn't aware of it then, but it was open for comments from the public.
No
kidding. So, anyway,
the things we should know about, right?
Huh?
I said the things we should know about that we don't hear about.
Oh, I know. I would have really had a blast with that. But anyway, it is on the Secretary of State's website. And it's a full draft report. And I just think, he started off talking about the history and the Constitution. It was really stressing the Constitution and things like that. So I haven't read the full document, but my understanding is that he is stressing property rights and religious, freedom. So I just like to put it out there. If somebody, the leadership of NLA can kind of review it and see if we can, even align with it, because, it just sounds pretty important. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it, but supposedly, I guess they want to promote freedoms around the world, I guess. So,
right.
Oh, Lord. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. And secondly, somebody within NLA suggested to speak to you, and I don't know if I could, talk to you privately, but I think you mentioned a faith-based trust, and that's the direction where I'm moving toward. I mean, I hope and pray the country gets back to common law and gets back to, rights and things like that, but,
Well, look, it's a whole
but in the meantime,
process.
Yeah, in the meantime,
right.
I just want to do my own thing,
Right,
so,
right.
So I'm, coming up with different ideas, and that, not the 501c3, there's another one, 504 something. Oh, God, I'm just blinking out on the numbers
What would you want a tax-exempt status for? You mean for yourself or what? I don't understand.
Oh, I want to launch my my own thing. Basically, I just don't want to even. I want to even maybe even do a contract. I just don't want to be a part of this whole system.
Well,
basically,
we can have I don't know. There's other,
huh?
other places to go. Look, the best thing is usually a trust. I mean, we use trust a lot because they can't be. It's hard for them to be pierced,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, and you can do it should be a common law trust, but I can't advise you on that at this point here. Maybe we can have a discussion of where to send people for stuff like that. And you're right.
Right.
If you stick to a religious based one, you're much better
mm-hmm.
off, because that's what we have to do. Look, this country has to get back to its faith.
I have like a little trust. I haven't done anything with it, but I did create one. But the religious one I really like, because
uh-huh.
it's just.
But you see,
I
wouldn't do a 501c3, and I'm going to tell you why.
No, I wouldn't either. No, there's another one.
Look, churches don't need a 501c3.
Right.
501c3 makes them a fiction of the state, and therefore now they're serving two masters. And we know what Christ said about serving two masters. And that's exactly what happens with that 501c3. They catch the churches with a carrot on the stick, but in the end, they control them. And they can't they can't preach the truth from the pulpit.
Right.
And
but there's another one. Yeah, this is
it's
a 504.
Automatic deduction. Look, it's like a 508 or a 507. And they, look, churches don't need to ask to be not able to pay taxes.
Right.
They don't need anything. They don't need any stupid piece of paper from the government, okay? So you could just start it out and say that that's what you are, and if they want to prove different, then let them prove it different. But they do make a provision that which is called an automatic deduction, which is kind of built into the Constitution. I'm going to say, churches never paid taxes. The way that they got them on this stupid 501c3 thing is they said, well, your parishioners will now be able to write off a percentage of their donations to you.
Right.
Oh, so that gave the churches a boost. And so then all the big corporations, you know, they use it as a tax deduction. So at the end of the day, mm-hmm. they're really not donating to the church. They're really doing a tax write-off. And if they really want to be truthful with themselves, they need to give 10% over that, because they're using it to lower their income. They're using it as a scheme, and that's what it is.
Right.
It's kind of a Judas thing, you know, dipping into the
right.
temple money, so to speak. So, you know, and it makes the priests partners with the corporations, and on and on and on. You could just see the mess that we're in, and that's part of a lot of it right there. And then they're not
right,
able to
right.
open their mouths, because they'll say, we're gonna cancel your tax-exempt status and take everything
oh,
back
I know.
And put
it's,
you in the
it's
street.
Really
you
horrible.
Want me out there with just
I
your
know.
Underwear. You know what I mean?
Well,
so,
yeah, well, that's why they got the, you know, I guess they're claiming jurisdiction to tell these churches not to open or wear a mask over your mouth
well,
when you're
you know,
worshiping. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
That
that's
stuff.
Right. They can do that. And, of course, Trump said that you can't do that. And then the stupid local people do it anyway because they fear. You know what I mean? And,
right.
And then what happens is, you know, meanwhile, your president told you that it's a First Amendment right. I mean, that,
right.
if that's all I need, you want to come and chastise me locally, then fine. You know, these people are afraid to stand up for their beliefs.
Right,
And their country and everything else. Look, let them beat you over the head, because at the end of the day, you already know you got a friend on top. You know you're going to win in the courts and the upper courts. I mean, now's the time to do stuff, because you have no excuse not to. God's going to hold these churches responsible for not stepping up to the plate now. Okay? They should not be closing their doors. It's baloney. But anyway,
I know, it's really
that's
sad.
A whole other,
I
don't
know.
Get me started on that. I'll never get off. Look, I want to
I know.
Going.
It's a great
minutes.
Shaking. But I'm just
yes.
wondering if there's some way I can talk to you a little bit more about that faith-based
I'm so hard to get a hold of right now, because I'm like in
sure.
I'm in Swamp. Fall mode, and I just, you know, I'm just recovering from a broken back, and winter's coming.
Oh, my
coming,
God, I'm so sorry.
And
oh,
I
Lord.
Can't, I'm only working
Are you
part-time.
Okay?
I'm going to be fine, but it's like it's a
okay.
process I have to go through. I can't work
oh,
like
yeah.
I used to work. I can't pick anything up, and it's going to be a while, you know. It takes about,
yeah.
you know, I actually yeah. had a complete break of the back. I had a burst fracture to L1, and it was completely
oh,
broken
Lord.
Off. I'm doing really
oh,
fantastic,
I didn't
though.
Know that. Oh,
yeah,
I'm
but
so
I'm so far ahead of this curve on the healing,
okay.
and I don't want to brag, but it's like a miracle.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm,
well, I'm going to pray
there's
for
you.
There's
a lot of silver, yeah, but I'm very busy, and
right.
my health is not where it needs to be. I burn wood in the winter, and
right.
you know, I'm very self-sufficient. But all you got to do is break mm-hmm. your back, and you find out how self-sufficient you're not. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that's right
well,
now.
Maybe
I'm very
there's
busy.
Somebody else. Yeah, maybe just somebody else in the organization might.
Yeah, there could be, and I'll talk to John about that. You know, I mean.
Okay.
And look at if we can find people and they want to do some kind of a workshop or something like that where they set up a discussion group amongst themselves. We just don't want people doing crazy stuff using NLA's
right.
name, you know. But we certainly,
right.
you know, if you had a group and we had some people who are more experts, we, you know, you could get some advice. Look at Brent is a common law lawyer. He's another
right.
one that you can talk to about this stuff. He knows way more about it than I do, okay?
Right.
I always tell everybody I know just enough to make me dangerous, so watch out.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I can't guarantee you that, you know, if you follow my advice, you won't end up in that house over there, that big house. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I mean, I know what I do for myself.
Faith.
I don't feel
yeah.
comfortable putting other people at risk. I take my own risk, and I live
Why
with them.
Why did some little bit research on it? And it's something you don't have to file with the IRS. I mean, you know, you don't have to do any kind of filing.
Okay, you don't even have to worry about the IRS. IRS is a thing of the past as far as I'm concerned. It's gone. It's going to be gone here. In another year, it won't even be. It's going to be completely
yeah.
different. The face of everything is going to change.
Right.
And that's why it's tough to do anything right now, because we are in a liquid transition. And, you know, you spend a lot of time and money making all these plans. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
You either didn't have to do it, or you did it wrong, or whatever. Because right now, everything's changing. The money's going to change. Everything is changing.
Yeah.
I would say, you
yeah.
know, just be real... be in prayer, because we need prayer right now. Because right. It could go either way. It could go very sour, right. Or it could go very good. We could have a 5,000-year right. leap into the future. They've been holding yeah. back technology and health and yeah. all kinds of stuff from us yeah. for 100 well, years you know, or more.
There's a lot of people who have been hurt by this.
Yeah, but it's, totally you know, look at the light at the end of the tunnel, the silver lining on the cloud is really, really beautiful mm-hmm. if we get there. And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And there's no reason we can't, as long as we stay faithful and stay true to the nation that we're supposed to be. Okay?
Right.
So,
well, okay.
I'll talk to you.
Well, I will pray for you when I...
Yeah, and look, drop an email anyway to Jan or whatever, and maybe I can talk to John and we can get to see a better
okay.
place to push you to for advice, because that's what you're asking for. You're asking for advice, and we certainly have a lot
yeah.
of advice. You should be networking with people in NLA, and we're networking with new groups we're bringing
right.
in now, so we might be discovering some new stuff, you know.
Yeah,
certainly keep
yeah.
coming to the Monday night call, because anything like that will be showcased here first, you know. So hopefully
right, right.
that'll all
no,
come
I like
out
that now. Workshop idea. That sounds really
yeah.
good.
Okay.
So,
nice talking to you,
that.
Cynthia. Yeah.
Well, like nice talking to you. God bless, and I'll
yeah.
pray for you.
Thank you. Okay.
Take care now. Bye bye now.
Yeah. Bye bye. Kevin. From, I don't know where you're from. It says that ALL. What state? I don't know. Are you there? Kevin.
Yeah, I asked my question already.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Thank you.
You're a good man. Thanks. Okay. Okay. Let's see. We got Brian A. You've been un... Brian A. I don't know what state you're from or anything, but you're unmuted. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Brian, I probably put him to sleep. Going once, going twice. All right, I'm going to go down to Dan. Wait a minute, it's Christina, excuse me. Hang on. All right, I'm going to open Christina up. I'm going to leave Brian open in case he comes back on. Christina, go ahead. We got to.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So my question is, me and my son happen to get speeding tickets lately. I haven't had one in 25 years, but how do I handle that in court? What's your advice on that?
Well, we have a form, I believe, on the site that you can challenge the jurisdiction thereof and play a little game with them, you know what I mean? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on, you know, they can't answer it and you go back and forth, and they're not used to people doing this. So they're going to want you to plead and all that stuff. I mean, unless your license is in danger, I mean, you can do a lot of stuff and you can play with them a lot, but, you know, and traffic court... The nice thing about it, unless you did something that like went many miles over the speed limit and killed somebody, at the end of the day, if you get in trouble, you just pay the fine. So that's a good place to sharpen your teeth on your court
uh-huh.
skills if you want to. But you know, first of all, I'm going to tell you, even if you don't do, no matter what you do, you plead innocent. You always plead innocent, and then you're going to come in and they're going to try to plea bargain it with you because they don't want to go to court, you know. And you can
mm-hmm.
demand a jury trial. There is a spot where we have templates. Are you a paying member, a $5 a month
yeah.
member? Because you should be able to access that when you go into court forms, and there's stuff in there that we use for traffic court, and you can really, you know, frustrate them, I guess. And a lot of times they'll just drop the case. It's not worth it to them, you know. So you have to decide what you want. You got to pick your battles. You got to decide how far you're willing to go, you know. And there's different strategies there that you can use. We used to have this really cool tape where I don't think it's up on NLA anymore, where the girl went in and she goes, "Your Honor, I know you don't want to violate your oath of office, but this or that." And they went through this whole scenario of what you say to the judge and the prosecutor. Now, the other one mm-hmm. that's really good is, what's his name? There's a lawyer that teaches this online, and this is all he does. And he has very good results. And I think it's Lewis. Is it Lewis? Maybe I can find that out for you. I'm not prepared to tell you that tonight, but there's a guy okay. that does all traffic case courses, and I don't know. Look at it. If you don't find it out, maybe next week bring it up again. And what I'll do is I'll try to prepare, and I'll get you those names. I'll get you the spot on our website with the papers that John has prepared. And
okay.
some of the other people that have been in here have prepared, and you're certainly welcome to use that. But this guy does a whole course, and he has I think they're claiming he's got like a 96% success rate, so that's pretty good.
Oh, awesome. Okay, yeah. So I'm more confident in doing that. My court date's on the 22nd, but my son is just 18, and I don't know if I advise. I mean, I was thinking that I'll just tell him to plead 894 because he hasn't had a ticket to go into court yet. So I don't know if that's, you know.
Yeah, I don't. You know what? Like I said, I know just enough to be dangerous. I mean, how big of a ticket is it? How fast over the speed limit?
My son, and mine would be easy to get out of anyway. I was going 33 and a 25. Now he was going 60 and a 25. I'm like, what are you thinking?
And he's young. They're going to want to slap him really good. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about the money, you know what I mean? He's got to worry about his license and all that in baloney. And they may, because it's his first offense, and I don't know what he could say why he was doing that, you know? Or
I know,
there's
even, no excuse.
No, I know. It's like, I don't know what to tell you, you know? It's like... main thing is he doesn't lose his license, you know, and which when you're that young, is he off probation? How long has he had a license?
Maybe 16 he got his license.
16, and he's how old now?
18.
Well, he went 2 years without doing that. So
let me just tell you, no, he's had a ticket before he was 18 and had to do community service. And he got out of one ticket when he made 18 because the cop said it was like the day after he made 18. Mm-hmm. The cop changed it to a seatbelt ticket, so he just paid that one online. I don't know if they look at all that when they pull the stuff up.
They may or they may not. I don't know. They're going to know, you know. Even when the cops give you a break, I think they put a little code there so the judge knows, and that's why.
That's what I was thinking. Like, how
yeah,
many,
like you
like,
come in with
a. This is like three strikes and you're out. Yeah.
Right, and so then you go in there. If he pleads it again, they may plea it again, and they may make it lower. But when he goes to pay his fine, it's going to be $500 or something crazy.
And it's on our insurance. See, that's the thing. It's on our insurance.
Yeah. Well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I didn't know if 894 even would work because, you know, he went so much over.
Yeah, I don't know either. And the thing is, you know, he's got to shape up now.
I keep reminding him. He's like, I got a heavy foot, Mom. I'm like, I don't want you to die either. You know, you're going to test.
Yeah, and you don't want to give him the wrong idea about the law that, you know, just because you know how to file certain paperwork, you don't have to pay attention to the speed limits. You know, look,
right.
speed limits are really for government vehicles. They're not for us.
Mm-hmm. I know that.
And if there's no injured party, technically you shouldn't be. But, you know, if you're doing 60 and a 25, that tells me that you're driving in a rural area really, really
a
fast.
A neighborhood, yeah.
You could kill somebody. And that police officer did him a favor by pulling him over, and he did the community a favor. That's the one time they were actually protecting and serving for a change, you know? So I don't know. You got to do what you got to do. But he should always plead innocent either way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Don't ever plead guilty or, you know, I don't know. You know, and maybe, I don't know what kind of explanation he has for doing that. There probably is none, you know what I mean? But... he could probably get it lowered, and
I had one other thing about his ticket. Now on his license, it doesn't say his race. My I'm Italian and French. So I'm white, definitely white, and my husband is Puerto Rican, which he has a little bit of color. So on my son, I think my son doesn't look black. but some people think he looks black because we had just been to the beach. Like, he went to the beach, you know, people that had Spanish in them tan easy.
Yeah.
So other than that, he's white like me, you know. So he had a little bit of tan, and his hair's a little bit curly. He has, like, a curly top. And they put that he was black on his ticket. I wanted to say something about that. I don't know if it'll get him in more trouble or not, because why didn't they just ask him what he was?
Well, today, you can be whatever you want. You say, I was identifying with, you know, Norwegian that day.
You know what I'm saying? Well, I live in the South, and it's a big deal. I know you're either black or white down here, but, like, to me, I wouldn't assume that's offensive to me that you put my son's black and he's not. You know?
Yeah,
so,
I don't know. I don't know. I had a census taker come over here the other day just along those lines, and he's questioning. Now, both of my parents were from Italy, from Naples, Italy. And, you know, so I'm second generation or whatever. Or third, I don't know. My grandparents were definitely, you know, they were born in Italy and everything. My mother was born there, came over here. My father was born here, went back there, came back. But anyway, he tells me, he says, oh, you're European. I always put white. I'm Italian-American, but I'm white. He goes, oh, that's European, you know.
Oh,
and
yes.
So I said, gee, I never thought of that. I said, I mean, is there any benefits for me? You know.
Yeah, right.
You know, just kidding. But, I wouldn't mention it with the ticket because, look, they're going to think he's a wise guy. You could mention it, but you better feel the judge out. I mean, it was the cop that put down black, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one thing the cops are not going to like is if you go in there trying to pull a race card, right? Especially now. But,
yeah.
I mean, could it work? Maybe it would if they're really sensitive to this white matter thing. You just pulled me over because I look black, right? You thought I looked black. You profiled me. Well, I don't think there was too much profiling at 60 and a 30, you know, or in a 25.
I know. It was
bad. I wouldn't even go there, you know. Let him take his medicine. Do your community service and get your foot off the gas pedal. Okay.
Jeez, I know. So I think the safest thing for him would just to plead 894 and see if they would even take it. Yeah,
just try it. I mean, look, the worst thing that can happen in those courts is you pay the fine. It's not like you're going to go to jail. You didn't kill anybody. There's really no injured party, really, you know? I wouldn't feel guilty about pulling a legal tactic like that and see if you can get away with it. But in the meantime, go up and check the paperwork out on our site. And if you stick to your guns with it, we've had people get out with that paperwork. But this guy, his name is Lewis.
Okay.
And he does traffic court, and he's excellent. And he kind of sticks to the Constitution, too. And the way he explains it and his strategy is pretty dang good, I think. Matter of fact, I'm going to ask John if he won't put a link up to his site.
The funny thing is, I think that I'm almost being tested to see all the stuff I've learned if I'm going to really put it to the test. I don't know why, because he pulled me over in front of my house. Like, I pulled in the driveway. They usually don't have any cops in the neighborhood. And so it's so weird. It was almost like he was put there to just pull me over to see, because of all the stuff I learned and I've been putting on Facebook and all that, to just see what I was going to do or something. I don't know why I kept thinking, man, they text me.
I know lawyers that use statutory law to get people out of tickets, and they go, I don't know. I want to see the when the last time that radar gun was checked, and how many feet were you? And they really put the cop on the stand and put him on trial. And that works, believe it or not. Was that thing calibrated? Especially if you're in a small town, because they don't keep up with the stuff. It's like
we're
in a town that
my husband's had plenty of tickets because he has to drive. I don't know if you know the Causeway Bridge is the longest bridge in the world. Okay, so my husband drives that every day. So my husband has had 20 tickets, and over here where we live, they only want the money. He goes and gets it reduced every single time.
That's what it's all about. Balancing the scales and making money. It's just revenue collection.
Yeah.
That's all it is. You're right. You're 100% right.
So.
All right. Well,
anyway,
good luck.
So, well,
let us know. If you have a good experience, come back on next week and tell us about it.
Okay, so mine's the 22nd, so I'm going to come on next week. And okay, am I looking on the website for the person's name, or am I coming back for the person's name next week?
Well, I would when you get off of here, go look for.
Hello.
Yeah, hello? Gerard, we lost you.
So.
I guess we're coming to the end. I wasn't paying attention at the moment. Bring up a question that you wanted to, us to respond to.
Okay, so he was telling me about some constitutional lawyer, maybe named Lewis or something. Was I supposed to come back next Monday for that, or was it on your website in some kind?
Yeah, I don't know about that information. You'll have to come back next Monday for that, and
okay.
And we'll see where we go. I think he meant something about posting something. Maybe it was on that person. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know if he was telling me to just go look, search online. Somebody, Lewis.
All right. Any other questions or comments?
No, that'd be all for today. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. We'll take our next caller. Let's see. We've got Jim from California. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hey, good evening, John. How are you this evening?
Good.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Very good. Hey, just a quick question regarding the September 25th trial or hearing, sorry. That was at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time?
Yeah, that's correct. I should have mentioned that. It's 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to put a link on our up on the website, and it'll have a page which will give all the information and maybe give a little details on the case and probably post the paper that we filed in the court. We wrote a very good, powerful paper in response to what they were trying to do. I mean, we were kind of ready for this. We knew what they were going to try to do. We've been here too many times. We know what their plans are and how they expect to throw us out of the court. And we wrote a good paper, a really, really powerful paper. And it deals with, for instance, we do have an attached memorandum on common law jurisdiction, and that's like 8 pages. And I don't remember how many pages the paper is. Maybe it's 10 or something like that. It's not too long. And it's got a lot of footnotes, but we cover, for instance, the right of the people to be able to come in as a lawyer. There is no such thing as a license. We got a lot of information proving that fact, and also that the right of the people to be able to come up and be a lawyer. You know, the Constitution doesn't guarantee anyone a lawyer. It guarantees them someone for, you know, to get advice from, not necessarily someone to represent them. Of course, you can have someone if you can't articulate yourself well, you could. But if we all had proper education, that's why it's so important to get our children to have proper education. If we have a proper education, one of the things responsible in our education is to teach us to be able to get up before a group of people and speak and to learn to articulate ourselves, to teach our children how to think, not what to think. Give them a classical education. Give them their heritage. And, you know, which will empower them and an understanding of our government and our court system and law and equity and all the different things that is necessary to know to be able to have government by consent. So that's where we got to go with this. But
right.
Anyway.
Hey, one other just quick thing. I'm a joinder in your case that's pending there, and one of the judges that abused me, which was Phyllis Jean Hamilton out here in California, she basically did a judicial foreclosure on my home. And they threw us out of the house last year. We came back into the house and have been occupying the house since then. I got a letter in the mail from the court, which I find to be most intriguing. Basically, they're requesting a settlement conference. Now, I had gone ahead and filed criminal complaints against the judge and the DOJ attorneys in that case. And
now, you joined your case. Did we get to the point of a decision and order on that also?
That was something I was going to ask. I don't know if there has been a decision and order.
Well, we've put out quite a few decisions and orders, and I know Jim's got some more for me to do.
Jim Pearson you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
all right.
Jim's got some for me to do. I know he's been trying to reach me the last few days, and I've just been too busy, and I've been ignoring my phone calls from everybody pretty much because I got too much paperwork I got to catch up on. And so maybe tomorrow I'll be able to talk with him if he gives me a call, and we'll try to get the next series of decisions and orders out. So you don't know if yours went out yet? When were you ready for one?
Well, I submitted all my paperwork way probably back last year or sometime.
Oh, we probably got to the point already and filed the decision in order. We did, I'm pretty sure we posted them up online. If not, we will.
Just real quickly then, we're on the website. What do I find those under? What portion of the site?
What, the ones that we filed?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm...
I think, wait a minute, actually, I did see an email that indicated that she was, or that particular judge was named in the case, but I don't know what the...
Well, we are indicting judges who are stealing people's homes and denying people due process and just ignoring us. So we are indicting them, and maybe that's one of the judges that's been indicted, and maybe that's shaken them up a little bit.
Okay.
The indictment stands. Whatever the case may be, they'll have to go to trial and deal with that. Of course, we have a problem with resistance, but it's interesting because our paperwork is in the system. They're not sending our paperwork back. They told us not to send anymore, but we keep sending them in a filing room. We're using it as a place to be under the auspices of the court, and we file it with numerous other places. But, you know, Attorney General Barr gets a copy, and we even copy the president. But so all our papers are in there. Our indictments are in there. Our informations we've given them. I mean, everything is in this case. It's on the Northern District, and we've been filing up there for 2 years. So it's a depository. We opened up the index number ultimately to use for a depository, and then we created our own number in order to deal with the common law because we're not under the civil law. We're under the common law. So go ahead.
Was there some description about how you guys do the numbering system? Because I was looking through some of those papers, and they all seem to have different. There was a case law number, and then there's a what's the other number that goes with it?
You're talking about the numbers for federal cases?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the papers that you guys have filed.
Well, we created a number for our case, being the first common law case probably in at least 50, 60 years. So we appointed our own numbers, and the number we appointed, I believe, was 1776-1789-1791, which, of course, is our DACA 3 founding documents that establishes our law.
But there was another number after that, which was like a kind of like a docket number, but it wasn't. You called it something.
Well, then there is the docket number, and the docket number usually starts off, and a lot of the courts follow the kind of the same plan. I know on a federal level they do. It starts off with the year. So if a case was filed in 2019, it would have 2019, then CV, and then a special number. I think it would be a single number hyphen and four numbers, or maybe it's four or five numbers. I don't remember after the CV.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, I'll go review those again and see if I can figure out if there's any information that I can use. Because these guys want to schedule a status call with me on the 30th of this month. And if I had something to beat them up with, I'd love to be able to do that. But anyway, all right, John, thank you very much for your time.
And by the way, the CV probably stands for civil.
Civil, correct.
If it was a criminal case, I don't know, maybe it would be CM or something.
Yeah, no, mine was a civil case. That's CV, correct. So, very good. All right, John, thank you very much.
Okay. All right, thanks for the call. Okay, we've got one other caller. We're 10 after 12. We're only going to take a couple more minutes here. Dan from the Carolinas, go ahead, you got the mic.
Greetings, Mr. John Durash and Mr. Gerard, and I hope Mr. Brent's on there.
I guess he fell offline here. Gerard, are you back in? I guess he didn't get back in, but go ahead.
Anyway, I had a long discussion today with Jan, And I think it'll be imperative that if in the morning that if you can get with Jan because of the time frame, just to give you an idea, I attended the first ever today bankruptcy case dealing with Douglas Wayne Stanlin and his wife. And he sure did not speak, and that didn't surprise us. And the trustee had him set up at actually about 11:15. His case never came on to almost 12 today. And when he did, his attorney and the trustee informed me that they were handling that case by interrogatories. And I can sure tell you that doesn't surprise me that Douglas didn't speak at all, because for 2 years now he's supposed to be full-blown dementia. And so that is something that we're going to have to find out officially and have, well, there could be a competency hearing, of course. But nevertheless, with the array of documents that's already, I don't know whether you visited the array of documents, but I'd like to make them simpler. And in the main thing, because we're time frame, I have to have in, unless we can get a continuance, my claims by September the 29th. That's 4 weeks from tonight, exactly, or the 29th, you know. And so the officials, the good part is the officials in Brunswick County, the Brunswick County Tax Administration, the Brunswick County Department of Social Services, and not to be lengthy, North Carolina Department of Revenue, and also the Internal Revenue Service in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, are on this list that was sent out as to creditors. And, of course, I'm listed on there. And then he's got two of his children. I will not call them, but he has two more children. And these two children are, they've been given anything, almost a Rolls Royce, to earn through businesses, homes, everything else. And but nevertheless, we know that's a scam to even have him even have a bankruptcy. The good part is, a case that is proceeding, is that it's a chapter wage earner plan. That's the least the best part about it. The only thing is, I'd like to ask you, it appears to me from what the trustee said to me today, he says at a certain point, he says your attorneys are going to know this, that there will be a stay put in place. And at that point, you know, there's no other claims or any process of the claims. This doesn't give the estate and the clerk of court enough time to prosecute Douglas, or at least we've got a few cases that we could do. And one is the documents that you have, which asks, you know, on a one page, which is a preliminary resolution document, for a default judgment. And then that won't even begin to touch the other claims that we would not be able to get justice. And I can sure tell you, I don't believe out of 200 or 300 transactions in real estate, especially any homes that Douglas and his wife may have been in for the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, however long they've been living as a married couple, I don't think there's one of those.
We're running way over time. I don't know if you can kind of shorten it up.
You
got to realize, you know, the particular case that you're talking about, you know, I know you've spoken about it numerous times over the past weeks, and I know Gerard particularly has been talking with you a lot about it. But a lot of the people, you know, unless they've been following along, they don't even know half of what you're talking about. But do you want to get to a certain point to make the point here?
Yeah, yes, the documents are there, but I can make them a lot simpler, because the first thing is that we need the cooperation of the county, and we also need the cooperation of the clerk of court to give us a default judgment, then that gives us.
Let me just ask you a question. Now, this is you're arguing where, what kind of, what's the court again that you're arguing with? Are you in a, this is about a trust, right?
This was a bankruptcy case that my brother and his wife instigated, and it's in an Eastern bankruptcy in Wilmington, North Carolina, and it don't give me time enough to work with the authorities to bring Douglas to complete justice. We probably can get one area, but the truth of the matter is I've noticed several different entities, like a bank that he stole all my mother's funds. It's not even listed. Then I found today and the last few days where...
Let me ask you, how did you end up in this court?
How did I end up in that court?
Yeah.
It was a court for creditors today, and there was documents sent out to me.
So creditors started off with creditors coming after you.
Do what? Creditors coming after me?
I'm asking you how it started.
No. It's creditors coming. It was called a 341 meeting with the trustee, and Douglas has filed a Chapter 13 wage earner plan, or at least his wife has, and she's the one that's got a power of attorney over him. We don't think that this is legitimate at all, and we think this should be carried to authorities. And so today I participated because I was under instructions to go in there to voice my claim or claims.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's a bankruptcy court, and you're in there to make a claim that you're hoping to bypass.
And I've got right now,
bankruptcy.
Yes, sir, excuse me, it only lasted about a minute and a half because everybody else were able to talk to the litigants. In this situation, they pulled a Hank Snow and they stated that this case was being handled by interrogatories. So Douglas nor his wife spoke at all, even though they were scheduled like everybody else. And
Who filed for the bankruptcy? Was it the individual? And you're saying that
Douglas, my brother, Douglas Wayne Stanlin, and his wife are all. You've got a copy of these documents.
Yeah, but I can't keep up on these things, Dan. And I got so many documents that I'm writing and dealing with and responding to the court. I can't get too involved in individual cases. You know, we do the simple ones that we put together, and my participation is bare minimum. I've created all the forms necessary that Jim runs through. But to follow a case, it takes time. And if you're really looking into the case to kind of a good understanding, it takes a lot of time.
What you might not realize in this, I know our time's limited.
But I
don't get much time to speak on this thing here. Nevertheless.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say to you is this. You know, what we focus in on is the simplicity of the court case. So if we can understand a little better about the court case as far as its origin, you said there's a trustee in there, and what's involved with the trustee, who gave them the fiduciary authority, has it been properly done, or did the judge make a decision and did a court order on that, and how was that done? And that's where you're going to be looking for the problems. Now, bankruptcy court is a lawful court. We put that together in the Constitution. Congress was given the power and the authority to create that kind of a court. So they deal with that. But there are certain things, when someone is filing bankruptcy, it's very difficult to really get anything out of that. There are certain things that could come up, and I don't have a lot of experience in bankruptcy, but I was involved in one case. Jurisdiction is usually the biggest key, but I don't think that's going to float in that particular court, most probably not anyway. See if that was all lawfully done right, because that's where you might
What I'm trying to get you to understand is already there is a document that is called preliminary resolution document. It's certified. It's in your paperwork, and we need a court clerk of court is the one that will handle this, and go ahead and give a default judgment in honor of that document that Douglas did not respond to timely, so, and it was started
well,
by him.
That is definitely one way to win that case.
It's very simple, but I can't, there's no way I can discuss this, these papers and make them simple unless I can have a conference with you, Gerard, and Brent. And I've got time frame here, and I can fax you just some simple documents so you can get an understanding.
I'll tell you what. There was something I wanted to talk with you about anyway. Why don't you give me a call tomorrow morning? Try to get me through Jan, maybe about 10, 11 o'clock Eastern time, and I should be around. And there's a few things I'd like to discuss with you. Then maybe we can make a plan.
I don't want you to give your number out over this phone, but I believe if I can get a hold of Jan in the morning, I've written your number down confidentially.
Well, listen, all you have to do is call Jan, and Jan will connect you in with me.
Exactly.
If you can't get him, in the morning, try it a couple hours later, you'll probably get him, and he'll be able to connect with me. A lot of phone numbers come into my, through my computer here, and I ignore most of them a lot of the times only because I just can't spend the day answering phone calls. It's hard to get.
Thank you, Mr. John. Thank you very much. I'm going to make this very simple. I have to because we don't have a whole lot of time, and I'll make it with a lot of coherency because I think
Hold on. But just bear in mind, if I can get Brent and Gerard and myself.
Absolutely.
Hang on a minute.
I've already talked with Jan. And Jan knows some things that I personally want to give to you and Brent both. I know you guys are busy. I'm not asking you to do this for nothing, okay?
Dan, listen. I want to talk with you about a few other things anyway, so we'll talk tomorrow. You're not going to be able to have a long conversation because I'm just too busy.
Yes, sir.
But if we can tie, and they're willing to come together. How much time are we looking at? 15, 20 minutes for a conversation with Gerard and Brent and myself?
The best thing I can do for you is to fax a certain small amount of documents that we are needing a default judgment for that's already been had.
You need the default judgment? Is that what you're saying?
I'll get information to you and Jan in the morning.
All right. Yeah, let's talk tomorrow. We'll see. But remember, it's hard to get the three of us together at the same time and for much time because I know Brent is extremely busy. Gerard, half the time I can't even get a hold of him.
I understand. Jan and I had a long discussion about this today. He has the documents. They're in a PDF format. But it's too much
time. Bear in mind, you're going to have to give us a quick synopsis. And then you have to be very specific in what kind of information you look for as we're listening. I don't have the time to read through people's
I understand that. You think I don't. I want to make it very simple and conserve time. So Jan knows this already, that I want to make the documents that you already have very simple because, see, those documents completely back up what my premise is that I need to get done.
Let's talk privately. We'll do it tomorrow morning sometime. And again,
I'm going to call Jan at least about 10 a.m.
If you don't get through to Jan, try a couple hours later or something. You'll probably get through.
Sure.
But, because Jan I always answer because he's, it's usually important when he calls me. So, okay. With that, we're going to end the program. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday. And again, don't forget to put it on to hang on a minute.
Yes, sir. Great call.
Don't forget to put it on your calendar to be at the the call in the court on September 25th, I believe it was, and I will put a page up there. I'll be sending an email out tomorrow, and I'll blast it out maybe once a week. We'll probably put it in our regular newsletter that goes out weekly also.
Right.
And again, everybody, don't forget to get your sheriff a book. We have to have constitutional sheriffs. So campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Get involved. It's the least we can do. If you're not doing anything, at least you could do that. But in any event, you should be educating yourself. This book will thoroughly educate you. It'll be a great book to use if you're going into a court and you need to dig out information. You can get information that you can use in your court very quickly, and so on and so forth. So, but again, let's get our sheriffs educated, and let's save this republic. Okay, good night, everyone. God bless.
Good night.
Lord willing, see you next Monday. Bye.
Great call. Thank you.